It's time for TWiT this week in tech. We've got a big show for you. Baratunde Thurston, Ashley Esquetha from CNET, and Mike Elgin. And we're going to talk about the big dump of CIA hacks and what it all means, South by Southwest, and why Uber isn't there. We'll even take a look at a very funny video that's making the rounds these days and break it down. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 605, recorded Sunday, March 12th, 2017. Think of the koalas! This Week in Tech is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/twit and entering the promo code TWIT. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TWIT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. And by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/TWIT. And by WordPress. WordPress salutes all the small businesses out there making a big difference. Create your small business website and get 15% off any new plan purchase at wordpress.com/twit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. And a big week this was, but fortunately we've got the big brains on the show today. Mike Elgin's here in studio with me. The biggest of the brains, Elgin.com. Becoming nomad.
You know, that's an interesting story, Leo, that we might want to talk about. It's now gastronomad.net.
You're not leaving. That's why. You're stuck here because you have a granddaughter.
We are leaving.
You can't leave.
We're all leaving. We're taking all these people with us.
Oh, good. I like that.
So I want to tell you about that.
Okay. I'd like to. That sounds like there's food involved.
Tons.
And I like that. Yeah. Also joining us, Baratunde Thurston. It's great to have you. He is an internet person.
Yes, I am.
Of interest.
To be back. I miss TWiT.
Yeah, we always love having you on from Brooklyn. Anything big in your world these days? What are you up to?
I revised my website at baratunde.com.
Good.
And I've rebooted my email list. I actually send messages to my email list now. So it's a revolution in email where I press send
Subscribe.
Much more often than I used to. So subscribe to that. There's a little bar at the top of my site. People can get that on. And I've been, just engaging in active democracy and using internet tools to help me do it.
So when does your run for Congress begin? That's what I want to know, because I will vote for you.
Right now, I'm just putting pressure on Congress. I've been doing Facebook Lives pretty much every Tuesday of my calls to Congress.
Nice.
And I play Hamilton music in the background.
Nice.
And we try to make it more fun than engaging in congressional calls generally is.
I'll give you full credit. Comic. You worked at The Onion for years, producer at The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. According to your website, you advised the Obama White House and cleaned bathrooms to pay for your Harvard education.
True facts.
Still doing About Race, right?
No, actually, my podcasting days, at least temporarily, have ceded.
Oh, good. Does that mean we'll see more of you here?
It could mean that.
That would be nice.
It could very well mean that. It would be nice. I like it here.
Good.
Yeah.
And I want to introduce a newcomer, not new to TWiT. She's been on Tech News Today many times. And, of course, we all know Ashley very well. Ashley, and I've been instructed how to pronounce her name, and I've been saying it wrong all this time, Esquetha.
Oh, you were so close.
You're so close.
Esquetha together.
Esquetha.
Okay. I'll get it right one day. Not today.
It's all good. It's all good.
Esquetha. You... Do other people know how to pronounce your name? Am I?
No.
Okay.
One time somebody actually guessed Quesadilla, which is kind of racist.
I think they're just hungry. That's weird.
Yeah, maybe they were just really hungry. It was at a Taco Bell.
I don't like Ashley Quesadilla. I'm sorry you said that, because you may end up accidentally, because I'm an old man.
Look, I'm down for cool nicknames, and quesadillas are delicious, so that's fine with me.
Ashley is a senior editor at CNET, and we're really glad to have you. This is, of course, the week that we could talk about nothing else but Vault 7, the big dump, 8,000-plus pages of hacks, purportedly, I want to say purportedly, allegedly, from the CIA. Julian Assange and WikiLeaks dumped them all, and they said in their press release that they only have put out a part of this trove, which has more pages than the Snowden leak.
Yeah.
Now, I got to say, it seems credible when you read it. There's certainly enough detail in there that you'd be hard-pressed for somebody to put this together, you know, as a fake.
Yeah, and there'd be no reason to. Everything, what this essentially says is that the CIA, big surprise, collects and develops methods for hacking.
What?
People and spying on people. It's a spy organization.
I am shocked.
And they have a
lot
of money.
Gambling is occurring on these premises.
And so the idea that this might be fake information is ridiculous, because if those are real hacks, the CIA now has them.
Right.
And will now use them, because they, if they're any good, they'll use them. The fact is, they're kind of old. They're a little dated, 2 or 3 years old at the newest. And people are freaking out more than they should, I think.
A lot of hair on fire. A lot of that caused by mainstream media, which kind of, I think, blew this out of proportion, right? Ashley?
Well, that's never,
they always get freaked out.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's so hard sometimes, especially with tech security, to keep people calm. Because, of course, there's always the question of your privacy and your data. And, you know, people are very protective of those things, and they should be. But then you have a lot of journalists who are not technology journalists, or maybe don't have either access to or don't talk to a lot of security experts a lot. And so they kind of take it at face value and say, oh my gosh, like, we think this is what it means. And then people kind of take that as gospel, and that's probably not the best thing.
I think a lot of the press just basically worked off of the press release that WikiLeaks led the cover page. And this was one line that I think fooled them. These techniques permit the CIA to bypass the encryption of WhatsApp, Signal, Telegram, Weibo, Confide, and Cloakman. And they stopped at the end of there.
Which
is
false.
Went and they immediately wrote that story without reading the rest. By hacking the smartphones they run on and collecting audio and message traffic before encryption is applied.
So what that means is that I can fool a bank's vault by mugging you on the way to the bank.
Right. The vault doesn't work.
Exactly. The vault is horrible.
The vault is broken. Rob you after you've taken your money out of the bank, and that also means the vault is bad.
Exactly.
The bank is very insecure for letting you get robbed after that.
So how dare they?
Open Whisper Systems, which creates Signal, of course, immediately jumped on this and said the CIA WikiLeaks story, this is on Twitter, is about getting malware onto phones. None of the exploits are in Signal or break Signal protocol encryption or any of those others. But I do like what they said. The story isn't about Signal or WhatsApp, but to the extent that it is, we see it as confirmation that what we're doing, our encryption is working. Mm-hmm. Ubiquitous end-to-end encryption is pushing intelligence agencies from undetectable mass surveillance to expensive, high-risk targeted attacks. And that's the key here, expensive, high-risk targeted attacks. And that's basically what we're seeing in this vault. It's not surprising, as you say, Mike, that the CIA would have these.
Exactly. I mean, if you think about a CIA scenario, they've got somebody on their radar they think is a terrorist suspect in Pakistan, and they want to listen in on conversations that person is having somewhere else. So they say, okay, can we plant a bug? Well, no, we can't do that. Well, can we tap the phone? Well, that's problematic for XYZ. Do they have a Sony TV, Samsung TV? Oh, okay, great. So they want a laundry list of ways to get access to a specific target. This is very, very different from the controversy around the NSA, which is about mass surveillance and phishing expeditions, where they're listening to everything, looking for keywords, and essentially trying to find out who's a criminal. In this case, they've already got somebody in mind, the CIA, most likely, and they have a bunch of tools at their disposal. Nothing is surprising about that.
Expensive, because you have to make them. High risk, because it's easy to get caught.
Right.
If you put a bug on a Samsung TV, there's a potential of getting caught. Targeted, in other words, aimed at specific individual attacks. That's a very different kind of attack.
The CIA is a spy organization. Their primary mission is to steal secrets. And the controversial aspects, the genuinely controversial aspects of the CIA are when they veer from that, when right. when they're targeted assassinations, things like that. Those are the things we should be really concerned about. When they're just doing their job and gaining the capability to steal secrets, then that's our tax dollars at work, and we want them to do that as long as they do it against genuine bad guys.
Like, isn't it so weird? Baratunde, yes. Isn't it weird that now from the left we are defending the CIA?
Absolutely. No, it's as a black American, as a left-leaning liberal American, to be somehow cheerleading the CIA is at minimum awkward. And I think Mike's point is super clear, and the distinction from what Snowden did and what he released was a massive level of unconstitutional behavior with domestic spying on millions and millions of people, just a dragnet of surveillance by Americans against other Americans. This is more targeted and thus seemingly better. I think if there's a surprise in this, it's not the revelations. It's, you know, how WikiLeaks has changed in the public mind and in its focus over the past several years. This started as a seemingly more journalistic, high integrity effort to shine a light on these dark areas of our democracy that weren't so democratic. Now it's much more propaganda. The timing, the correlation, if you look at this in the broader sweep of what's happening in national politics, this isn't a politics show, of course, but I think it's impossible to ignore that we have a new president who's seemingly at war with the intelligence community, and this is a perfect time to kind of undermine the credibility of the intelligence community when they have been leaking and raising doubts about how he even ascended to power. So that's the strongest sort of threat that comes out of this. Isn't about like my Alexa snitching on me, but it's more about my president maybe not upholding the Constitution in the way that he's oath-bound to do.
In other words, WikiLeaks used to look out for the little guy. Now they look out for the Russian guy.
The very big guys, at least, yeah.
The contrast this to how Snowden released his material. So Snowden had a similar large trove of NSA exploits. Instead of dumping it on WikiLeaks, which Assange must have wanted, mm-hmm. He decided instead to contact journalists and independent and associated with the Washington Post and mm-hmm. the Guardian and the New York Times, and said, "Here's the trove. As journalists, what I'd like you to do is vet this and release it safely." He also strategically did the right thing because it took a long time. It took several years for all the material to release, so it kept our attention for a longer period of time. It seems likely that by dumping this on WikiLeaks, it's going to make a big splash, and then we'll forget it in a month.
I think we're already almost ready to forget it because, you know, the fact is that these are capabilities, not things that have actually happened. It's about individual legitimate surveillance instead of mass surveillance that's unconstitutional, theoretically. I mean, they could use it, I guess, unconstitutionally. But really, this was designed for impact. WikiLeaks seems to have had an agenda to impact the political conversation, and whereas the agenda with Snowden was public understanding of what's really happening. And so that's really a big difference in how it was leaked. And I think, again, this really harms the reputation of WikiLeaks among, I think, the majority of people who are really paying attention.
There are a couple of issues, though, that maybe don't reflect well on the CIA. One, of course, is how long they've known that these tools have been leaked out. And, of course, almost all these tools involve exploits of security flaws that have been previously unreleased in Google devices and Apple devices, Microsoft devices, Samsung TVs. If, for instance, we don't know, but if the CIA knew about this a year ago, wouldn't they have a responsibility to tell those companies? And this is not unprecedented.
Now, Leo's hilarious.
I know. I don't expect them to. One of the reasons they don't, of course, is because if they let people know, then they'll patch the holes. And then if they patch the holes, they won't be able to use these anymore. But there is this, believe it or not, President Obama created a process. It's called the Equitable, I've got it right here. I can't remember the exact name. The Vulnerability Equities Process, or VEP. And this happened a year ago when a bunch of stuff belonging to the NSA was leaked out by somebody called the Shadow Brokers. There were 15 exploits, including, remember, the Cisco, Juniper, Fortinet, Zero Days. And the question was, should the NSA have warned Cisco once they knew this stuff was released? As a result, in January of 2014, President Obama made it government policy, a policy, by the way, that's probably been honored more by ignoring it than by doing it, but a government policy to disclose by default any new vulnerability. If an agency finds a zero day, they have to, believe it or not, and this, you're right to laugh, Baratunde, but this is the policy. They have to argue their case through the vulnerability equities process to an equities review board chaired by the National Security Council and attended by representatives of other agencies. The whole idea being, you've got to justify keeping this a secret because there's a risk to the American people that these vulnerabilities will be used against them.
What a concept. Yeah. To actually protect the American people above and beyond the protection of the aims and struggles of one's own organization. And this is, I think that this is one of the biggest issues that we should be talking about in all this leaks. What is the responsibility of federal agencies in protecting the American people from espionage? I mean, if you think about the relationship that technology has had with China, it's been to a very large extent a question of the Chinese government systematically stealing U.S. tech secrets, everything from spy planes to chip technologies, and it's just a wholesale theft of all kinds of trade secrets. So what has the government done to protect the American people and the American economy from this theft? Very little, I think. And that should be a big controversial point.
One of the things that I think is the biggest issue towards that end is that a lot of our politicians in this country are Luddites. They don't use technology. They don't like it. They have their their aides use technology. They run their Twitter accounts for them. They don't really have an understanding of a lot of the technology that surrounds them on a daily basis. And the people that end up shaping that policy are people who give them money to then, you know, for their campaigns, good or bad. And they end up saying, well, this is how really we should do it.
And that's why Baratunde is going to run for the Senate. Al Franken did it. Funny people can run for the Senate.
Funny people do it every day, but they're generally not funny on purpose. To tag team on both Mike and Ashley, I think if you take the alarmism around the Muslim ban, the travel ban, and this alleged effort to protect the American people, using your language, Mike, and also the language of the Constitution conveniently, if we were serious about protecting, you know, U.S. citizens, U.S. residents, people within the contiguous United States plus Hawaii and Alaska, we would take these threats of the cyber far more seriously. And it would be second nature and non-controversial and obvious to alert the public, to alert companies, to make sure we are safe, because the actual damages, loss of life, financial impact, negative financial impact from tech-based attacks is much higher than bombs in public spaces. And, you know, this idea that we're going to like block people from 6 or 7 majority Muslim countries to keep us safe, meanwhile, you know, we are allowing exploits in our tech infrastructure to allow trade secrets, personal information, doxing, blackmail, and whatever else is going on unfettered, you know, reveals the lie of what it means to have the priority of the executive be the defense of the American people. So I think, you know, they're connected, and a true defense of the republic would be a tech defense, a cyber defense. And that's not what's happening if we're sitting on these exploits and not informing people how to protect themselves.
2012,
Baratunde. Do you think that, well, I guess this goes to everybody. Do you think that the question is, like, do tech companies need to have or work with our government to have a small team, let's say, of security experts that have clearance that can then, you know, interact with them and be able to get information without, you know, but then it's so hard because it's like, and then you have to worry about, like, well, are companies giving away certain pieces of data that they feel is okay? It's like this really strange kind of gray area that we haven't figured out yet. But do you think tech companies should have some role in those intelligence communities that's a little bit different and a little bit more, I guess, direct and transparent than what we have now?
More transparent, yes. More direct, very skeptical. Because the tech companies, they don't have a lot of credibility when it comes to their first priority, which is us as customers and citizens and consumers, and they abuse our data constantly. They're selling our stuff up and downstream to data brokers. They're building profiles on people who never joined their social networks to begin with. So they lack a certain moral authority to fully claim to defend us when they're selling us out, you know, mm-hmm. in both directions constantly because of the ad-based model. Like, it's all, I sound like a bit of a conspiracy theory, but I think it's just their business model essentially forces them to not respect our data as sure. the basic premise of their profit-making entity. So it's hard to talk out of the other side of your mouth about how much you care about consumer privacy and data when your business model means you sell us out.
Yeah, that's true.
One thing we did learn, though, is that the CIA has much better code names than the NSA.
That's awesome.
So much better.
Weeping Angel, baby. Weeping Angel.
So I didn't know this. Weeping Angel, which was the Samsung TV exploit developed in conjunction with MI5, the British spy agency. And the idea was you could put this on a TV. It's not clear if it was a remote exploit. It looked more like, best I could tell, and you know, this the information isn't that clear in the even in the WikiLeaks documents, it was designed to sit on an SD card or a thumb drive, and then when you get access to the subject's premises, besides
like breaking into their house.
When you break into the house, besides putting a bug in the wall and in the light bulbs and in the phone, you can now put it on the TV. And the TV, even though it looks to be off, is still recording audio and video, which is nice, handy. But that's called Weeping Angel. What I didn't know is that that's a Doctor Who reference.
Oh, yeah. Don't blink.
Creepy Don't episode. Blink.
So that's why I think MI5 had more to do this with than the CIA.
But then there's Ricky Bobby, which is a...
Ricky Bobby from Talladega Nights.
It's a Will Ferrell reference.
Quintessentially American hero, Ricky Bobby.
What does Ricky Bobby do?
It targets Windows computers.
It doesn't know what to do with its hands.
Shake and bake.
Sweet baby Jesus. Well,
we can laugh about the erosion of civil liberties. It's hilarious.
It's, like, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You can't cry for 4 years. You got to sometimes, you got to look up and.
I am not being sarcastic in that comment. It's hilarious.
It is. It absolutely is. They did have code names, which I thought was interesting, for Windows itself, for Macintosh, and for Linux. I'm trying to find the code names are hysterical. But I can't find them now. They have to do with parties, basically. It sounds like the CIA is having a very good time.
Let's all come up with code names for us. Like, I already have Quesadilla, so I'm good. But, like, ooh. What do you guys want for code Quesadilla. Names?
I want to steal one of their code names for myself. So Windows, Velociraptor.
Windows code name was Bartender.
Makes sense.
I guess this is so you can when you're communicating with other spooks, you can talk, you know, the goose is flying high on the bartender at midnight. Mac OS was Jukebox. And Linux, as everyone knows who's into open source, is the dance floor.
Well, that's where all the crazy stuff goes down, on the dance floor.
On the dance floor.
We all know.
And their configuration utilities, among others, are called Margarita.
And the jukebox.
And Mac OS is like a closed. It's a closed.
Oh, it's closed.
Very
closed.
Limited selection of opportunities, right? They're going to prescribe what music you want to enjoy through a jukebox.
We've already thought
Windows
more
is
about
the bartender
this than the
because
CIA has.
All those software updates just make you want to get drunk.
Yeah, there you go. And the peanuts are free, though. Yeah.
That's true.
We should all take
the cookies.
This is like some basic tradecraft 101 from the CIA, given, you know, you should speak in code. Don't speak openly in even secure channels about what you're talking about. So we should come up with code names for all kinds of other stuff, too. So this is a good lesson.
This story broke on Tuesday, and Steve Gibson, who didn't have time to really fully review it, I mean, it's 8,000-plus pages, says he will be talking about this Tuesday on Security Now. And I'm sure he'll look, not from the political point of view or the capabilities point of view, but just look at each of these different exploits and tell us what they mean. WikiLeaks, to their credit, did not release code. They merely released the single page descriptions of a lot of these.
Didn't they hint the code was coming, though?
Yeah.
WikiLeaks is good at hinting at things that are coming but never do.
Right.
And there's Zeynep, her last name always escapes
Tufekci.
Me. I think it's
Tufekci.
Tufekci.
Yeah.
Tufekci.
She's great.
Wrote for the New York Times and helped deflate the inflated bubble of alarm around this. And just reminding people of how WikiLeaks has operated in the past with promises to deliver that never come through. And they don't need to release code. They really were trying to affect, you know, again, to Mike's point, the news cycle, the political conversation. And, you know, we all know you don't need facts to affect the political conversation, especially these days. So WikiLeaks is playing the game the way it's been redesigned. They're really good at it.
She writes, security experts I spoke with stressed these techniques appear to be mostly known methods, some of them learned from academic and other open conferences, and that among this trove of exploits, there were no big surprises or unexpected wizardry.
So I think that makes sense. If your phone is compromised, you're screwed. Everybody knows that. If your phone's been compromised, and a lot of these methods have to do with having physical access to the device. Like, there's so many of them that need physical access. So, the thing that I worry the most about is the CIA uses these techniques for foreign agents, and sometimes they'll sweep up U.S. citizens in that. And that's not good. But I worry about foreign agents using this on U.S. citizens who do not have up-to-date OSs, out-of-date smartphones.
Right.
Poor security.
You know who's using an out-of-date smartphone?
Somebody I know in the White House.
Yeah, he's using a Galaxy S3, as far as we can tell. I think it was you guys at CNET who figured that out by zooming in, center, enhance.
We said enhance a lot. Yeah, there was a lot of enhancing.
Oh, like a Super Trooper.
Yeah. That's good. And of course, if you look it up, the S3 can't get past KitKat. It's using a very old version of Android that is, unsafe.
Yeah. And it's just, that's the thing that worries me. I mean, it's like, I look at all of this and all I can think is there are people in our government who, again, are not tech savvy people, and they use old cell phones with not updated operating systems and very unsafe practices. And that is the thing that concerns me the most about this Vault 7 dump. I mean, I do have concerns about, obviously, civil liberties and our privacy and all of these things. But to me, the big fear on my part, at least in my opinion, is that we have so many government officials who have who have phones that are very old and unsecured.
Yeah. So again, don't worry. Signal is still secure. WhatsApp is still secure. But the president's tweet phone is not.
It's just not.
Oh, actually, if you're one of the leakers in the White House who's using, what is it, Confide. Apparently that has been hacked.
That's right. That is insecure.
So stop using that and go back to Signal.
You're going to get spicy timed. Better watch out.
The real problem with Confide is not so much that a third party can intercept it, but the people at Confide have access to the keys.
Right.
And so they could, either under government subpoena or a rogue employee, or just because they felt like it, look at your messages.
Or because they got hacked. Right. Whoever has the master key ring is susceptible to compromise.
And how much do we know about Confide as a company, where they're located? Nothing. Right. I mean, we know nothing about
it. I don't know why that became the standard for White House leakers. Is it really? It may not even be. It's just what I hear on the street.
Reported, yeah.
So the shorter headline.
I've heard. Many people say. Yeah.
The CIA is being real CIA right now. That's basically.
Yeah. CIA be CIA in.
Yeah. Yeah. CIA being real CIA.
You've got to think that every hacker in the world is trying to figure out how to hack. If President Trump is using an S3, how to hack that phone. Not because they want to see the tweets before they're posted, but did for instance, the Secret Service take out everything else? Is there still a camera? Or is there a little piece of duct tape over it? Is there a microphone? Or did that get snipped? I mean, what exactly capabilities did that phone have? And I've got to think at this point it's secured, whatever it is, or we would have heard something by now, right?
I don't know.
Can we just give him a jitterbug? Can we just give him that?
With the big keys.
Yeah. You know what he needs? He needs a cha-cha. Go get him one of the HTC cha-cha. It's only, but with a Twitter button instead of a Facebook button.
It's also possible that there's no risk there because we know he's at Mar-a-Lago, so we know his location.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen? What's some hacker going to do? Tweet crazy things from the phone?
How would we know
that it was even hacked?
Oh, Lord. I walked right into that one. All right, we're going to take a little bit of a break. This is going to be a fun panel. Mike Elgin is here. He writes, of course, for Computer World and
the company of Fast.
InfoWorld, Fast of the company. You also see him on Google Plus still? No?
Sure.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love Google Plus.
I love it.
After everybody left, it got really peaceful.
It was always the best social network as a social network, but not the best place to find people.
Right.
You know what
Which
I mean?
Which is amazing because you use the word social, but then also said it was hard to find people. So I'd like to just point out that semantic disconnect there. It's, are you like I Am
the
Legend?
Real social ghost town.
Will Smith of Google Plus. Just you and your dog.
Just him and his dog wandering through the landscape. He goes to
spacious.
He goes home at night because that's when the scary people come out. Actually, David Brin, who's a science fiction writer, posts there a lot. Lauren Weinstein. There's great photographers, bakers.
There.
It's not. It's nice now.
If you have an obscure hobby, it's great because
it's great
I guarantee you
hobbies.
That your obscure hobby is going to have an active community on Google Plus. Yeah.
Like, look, here's the Geeks community, 70,000 members. Yep. Foodies Online, 74,000 members.
And there are literally thousands of food related communities.
Yeah,
there's like 100 bread baking communities.
Isn't that really where social media is best? Where it's not a mass of people,
yes.
but it's communities of narrow interest.
I think so. I like to see it as a cross between like Reddit and like, I don't know, Instagram or something like that. Reddit, what's great about Reddit is very narrowly categorized. So you join a community that talks about some specific thing. And that's all
that's
that everybody
what
talks
you
about.
Do,
and
so
Google
you stay
Plus
away
is good for that kind of thing
places.
As well, but it's more visual instead of looking like
where else are you going to see a picture
like
of
Pinterest with words?
Yeah, in fact, doesn't it look a little like Pinterest with words? Yeah. Where else are you going to see a picture of Adam West and Yvonne Craig on the set of Batman 1968?
You're not.
He's probably on Instagram. I'm just going to take a wild guess.
Okay. Yeah. All right. God, I'm trying to give these guys some cred here.
I don't know that Google needs your help. I think they're doing just
they don't
fine.
Need my help. That's a great picture.
I think Google Plus might need your help, but maybe not Google.
Yeah.
Why is he riding a stingray? That's
why is he wearing a bathrobe? He's hiding that magnificent
it
costume.
It gets chilly in that. It's chilly in that leotard.
The bat leotard.
Yep.
Also with us.
It's real cold.
Let me try it again. Ash. No, I can't say your first name.
You can say my first name.
Ashley Esqueda.
Yes.
That was good. That was good.
Ashley Esqueda. Senior editor at CNET, Baratunde Thurston. I don't know why I don't have trouble with your name.
Because I've been around the way so many times now. I don't know. Maybe this is my 12th visit here, 15th.
I love having you on, dude. If I could get you on every time, I would. I just always think you're great. All three of you. Thank you for being here. Our show is brought to you by my mattress. Hey, you know what?
Your specific mattress.
My mattress. When we get back, I want to talk about this travesty known as daylight saving time.
Yes, let's abolish it.
Thank God I had my mattress because I lost an hour of sleep last night, but fortunately it was an hour on my Casper, and so I'm very much relaxed and not as exhausted as I would be. Casper makes the best darn mattresses. They sell them direct to you, so you don't pay the middle person markup, the no resellers, no showrooms. They pass the savings directly onto you. Casper mattress. It's fun. On the website, they have the process they went through. They made hundreds of prototypes. They're obsessive about this. They engineered a mattress that they wanted to give you both support and give. This is a hard thing to do. But a great mattress is going to support you. You don't want it to sag. You'll have a bad back in the morning. But at the same time, you don't want your hip bone to be like, you know, pressing into the thing. And they found a way. They made it a combination of supportive memory foams. So it's got just the right sink, just the right bounce. It's very breathable. Look at that, 3,240 hours of testing. Now, that's not that much if you think they were sleeping on them, but I think that they do testing in other ways as well. It's breathable, too, so you don't get hot. Now, summertime's coming, and you know you don't. The worst thing in the world is a hot, sweaty night, but on a Casper, you'll always sleep cool. It provides long-lasting comfort and support. You can buy it online. Comes in a surprisingly compact box, which is great for those third-floor walk-ups in Williamsburg. My son, actually, we got him a Casper mattress for his dorm room, and it was easy for him to get it in. And then you open it up, it goes, and it becomes this beautiful, comfortable, luscious mattress. And I know your reluctance is, well, Leo, I'm not going to buy a mattress if I can't try before I buy. Well, you can. Casper offers free delivery and painless returns for free with a 100-day trial period. So you can try it for 100 days. If any time in the first 100 nights you say, that's not for me, you call them, they come, they pick it up, they get it out of your hair, and they refund every penny. So this is so much better than trying it out in a showroom. You could try it out right now. Call them. Get online. Get a Casper. Free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. And you will save an additional $50 on your mattress purchase if you go to casper.com/twit and use the promo code TWIT. Casper.com/twit, promo code TWIT. Terms and conditions apply, but I think you're going to like it. Casper.com/twit. Twit. Our friend Clayton Morris is starting a movement to abandon daylight saving time. I do this every year, and then by, you know, 2 weeks we'll have forgotten, and we're going to live with this thing. There will be tomorrow 24% more heart attacks because we jumped forward. 24%.
Wait, really?
Daylight saving time kills people? I didn't know that. That's a terrible statistic.
It kills people. There will be a dramatic increase in traffic accidents. More people will put their hand in the drill press by accident. No, I'm making that one up.
It's probably
true. Was really horrified by that. I was like, Liam,
yeah,
no,
25% more. Yeah, I know. I just, but 24% more traffic accidents. Heart attacks, traffic accidents go up. Judges, get this, on the Monday after daylight saving time tomorrow, do not go to court. Judges dole out harsher sentences because they're cranky.
They'll put you away.
And according to the New Yorker, employees are more likely to cyber loaf on the internet on Mondays after daylight savings.
Well, that's every Monday.
Yeah. I was gonna say, that every Monday.
And then the funny thing is, when we revert, making the sunset earlier, street crime goes up. Traffic accidents involving wildlife. It's the peak time. Don't laugh. It's the peak time for deer and elk migration. In fact, this is true. I read it in the New Yorker. They have fact checkers. Researchers in Australia have calculated ending daylight savings time there throughout the year would reduce the number of koalas killed by motorists by 8%.
That's not going to help anything.
Won't someone think of the koalas?
Think of the koalas. And by the way, it doesn't save energy. And
will it lower your taxes, though? Like, if getting rid of daylight savings will lower taxes, everybody be for it in this country.
Everybody be in,
right? Got to sell this the right way.
The thing that really bugs me about it is this is such an antiquated idea that we're all marching in lockstep to the same kind of schedule. People have all kinds of different schedules. And by the way, why don't we go ahead and abolish time zones as well? Why don't, in the airline industry and any kind of aviation, they have something called Zulu or what's the real
UTC.
Name? UTC. We should all just be on UTC.
No, because then you'd be like, this show would be... like at 2 a.m.
Exactly. But when you said that, you wouldn't have to explain it. You wouldn't have to say, well, if you're there, it's a different time.
Time
if you're
is irrelevant.
There, it's a different...
You wouldn't call it 2 a.m, actually.
You'd call it
2300.
Zulu.
Or actually 2200.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's crazy. Another thing. Because I have to explain our time, because even though we do this show at 3 p.m. Pacific, that was 2300 UTC, but now we've changed what Pacific is. So the people in England who haven't changed yet have to know the show starts an hour earlier, and then their time will change. It's just goofy.
And there's some places that have a half an hour difference or like an hour and a half difference.
Well, those places shouldn't exist, first of all. They were asking for it. But I've been monitoring the chat room, and I'm so sorry to be so delayed in giving the chat room a shout out. Someone over there, and maybe many, have a great idea. Abolish daylight savings and the Electoral College. I would keep time zones if we were at the Electoral College.
Okay, you get one thing for the farmers and one thing not. There you go. That's perfect.
Yeah, so everybody can get something out of this. That's cool.
I just want to know give me a short list of honest benefits that I get as a person out of daylight saving time, because I can't find any.
The farmers, it was originally to save energy. But as it turns out, studies have shown it doesn't save energy because people spend more time with the air conditioning. Right. And besides... Yeah. Yeah, you turn off the lights at the office, but you turn them on at home. So it doesn't,
turn them on at home.
It's a net zero. People said it's for the farmers. Well, I can tell you, we're in dairy country. The farmers hate it because the cows do not honor daylight saving time.
Or the koalas.
No, they don't know. They're not wearing watches.
The cows are saying, what are you doing here? It's not time. I don't want to be milked.
Yeah.
But wait, can I just be super simple-minded about this for a moment? It's called daylight savings. Are we not saving daylight?
Daily saving. It's just one. I have a local radio DJ who is
thank you.
Super adamant about this.
I love the cop get it, actually.
Saving daylight
it's
saving
adamant.
Time.
It's adamant. It's saving. There's only one.
I'm obsessed with savings because I'm thinking about Casper. I'm thinking about tax refunds because it's
you're
coming
saving
through.
Daylight.
Now, we may finally, because I've been wailing about this for years. This, by the way, wasn't a national thing until 1966. So this did not become... common in the United States until 1966.
People were on LSD in 1966.
What do they know?
There you go. That's exactly what happened.
This country came to a lot of things late, like women voting and black people having the right to walk down the street in peace. So I wouldn't knock lateness as like a real ding against it. We got to choose another problem.
Okay,
with
it.
But
right,
I think that decade we can also attribute to, I mean, Fantasia. Like, I mean, I think there was just lot of drug use happening.
Fantasia.
So we might just be able to contribute daylight saving time.
Purple hippopotamuses and tutus. How?
Only LSD can explain it.
So apparently at the state level, there are currently 24 bills pending. Legislators in New Hampshire, Maine, and Rhode Island, for instance, have suggested permanently moving New England from Eastern Standard Time to Atlantic Standard Time. They would They would be 1 hour ahead of New York and in sync with Nova Scotia and Labrador.
Let them go, including from time.
Yeah. The New Hampshire bill stipulates that it goes into effect only if Massachusetts does it too. Well, only going to do it if Massachusetts does it too.
It's crazy.
Don't we all want to just be free of time? Like time constraints?
Yep. Now we're talking,
get rid of the concept of time.
Didn't Swatch create a Swatch time, an internet time of some kind?
Yeah, everybody ignored it.
Yeah, that's too
bad. That was a terrible marketing.
Really, yeah, but the main benefit of time is to synchronize activity, and that's why we don't need time zones. We just need to need a number that says at this point in the space-time continuum, we can have our meeting or whatever, and that's it. All these time zones and, like, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning is in the morning. Well, it kind of is, depending on what part of the Earth you're on. It's just antiquated beyond belief.
But Mike, this whole idea of abolishing time zones, don't time zones give us a sense of synchronicity with our regional neighbors, providing an us versus them, which is a valuable tool create a coherent society, like East versus West?
It does.
Very strong.
It does, but it's a misleading one.
We need American time.
You're on Brooklyn time, right? So it's like we're having a live conversation.
Freedom time.
Live conversation, Brooklyn time, right? Keep going. Right.
Heart attacks go up. There's no increased risk to children in rural areas. Traffic accidents spike. Workplace injuries go up. Strokes go up.
I'm going to write something in defense of daylight saving just to piss you guys off.
Workplace productivity goes down. Permanent daylight savings time will help decrease air pollution, according to the Journal of Air and Waste Management Association. Clock changing, according to the Wall Street Journal, harms relationships.
Well, if you've ever tried to watch your husband change a clock on a VCR, let me tell you, it does harm a relationship. It's true. By yelling.
You have a VCR?
No, I don't know. I'm just saying.
That sounds apocryphal.
Like a thing people would yell at each other.
Honey, it's blinking 12 again.
I fixed
it last week. So
I found this is a scientific, what's on stanford.edu. To me,
that's good.
Science.
That's a start.
It could just be it's a personal website. And the benefits of daylight savings time. Sorry, saving time. The chat room is killing me. It shifts summer daylight to evening hours when it can be enjoyed more. I think this is a good reason. So that's
no, we
one.
Just stay. We stay on daylight savings
I agree
time.
With that. We stay with what we have back. Right now, which is long days.
Stay with what we got.
I like long days.
No, it's not going to change the length. The length of the day is not governed by daylight saving time.
If we get rid of time zones, that's just one step
here's
towards
the, sun,
the United Federation.
And here's the Earth. And it goes, oh, man.
I don't know. Now, Leo, I'm doubting everything. Science, facts.
How about this?
Time. This is all a simulation anyway, you guys. It doesn't even matter.
Here's a study. Thank goodness. You know,
yes.
Lately, ever since Elon said that, Elon said, chances are 1 billion to 1 we're not in a simulation. This is a game.
It takes a lot of pressure off.
It does.
Yeah.
Elon doesn't says, matter. You know what? Next year, let's send two people to Mars.
Yeah.
Or the moon. We're going to go around the moon. Let's just do it.
For funsies.
Why not? For funsies. What could possibly go wrong? Who cares? It's a simulation. Right.
They're volunteers. They signed the
thing. It doesn't matter. They're just glitches in the system anyway. Just send them to the moon.
That is a mind worm, because ever since he said that now, I think that a lot.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's just a simulation. Like,
I'm sorry, guys. I got to bring it back to daylight saving time for a minute. Here's my last.
And he's in a hurry, too, because we lost an hour.
No, you got to hurry. Well, get it all out.
First of all, last night I watched an episode of Twin Peaks, and then I looked at my clock. And it was 3:45 in the morning. How is it so late? But it wasn't. Daylight saving stole something from
me. It stole something
from you. Which is my sense of reality.
Yep.
Second,
unlike Twin Peaks,
if we just have a single time zone, that means at any point in the world at this moment, it is like 22:17 Zeta or whatever. But I associate time with like the position of the sun. Wouldn't that ruin that? Like, we'd have to choose a point of primacy to determine that.
You'd still do that, but based on where you live. So you'd say, oh, the sun rises at 5 p.m.
Here in Petaluma, the sun comes up at 0500.
You just get used to it.
Yeah.
You'll get used to it.
The sun rises at 1700?
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's only insane because
it's just a number.
Because you're so used to living by this weird, arbitrary.
I think Celsius temperatures are insane, so I understand your issue, but I think we get used to it. It's the kind of thing.
It'd be like if we switched to the metric system.
Let's do that.
Abolish time zones.
We couldn't even agree to do that.
We are getting so much done for the world right now on this show. I am so excited.
Can I just take a moment, because I never got the opportunity to do this, to defend the U.S. not being on the metric system?
Okay.
And that is, as a writer, you can't use metric measurements in poetry or literature. You can't say, it won't be a song that's like 500 kilometers.
I would walk 500 kilometers.
It just ruins the it's terrible. Feet
like
and inches and so on are poetic, sort of.
So here's a map of the world. In red, the three countries that still use the imperial system, still use feet, miles, and Fahrenheit.
That is not a fair representation. You have to show a visual image that represents the amount of guns or nuclear weapons. And that will explain more the persistence of the imperial.
The United States, Myanmar, and Liberia.
Wow.
That's it. The last three. We're standing. This is the Alliance of Good. This is.
I'm going to play these three countries the next time I play Risk.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
I want to be.
The imperial axis.
So I apologize for bringing us back into a debate about time if you wanted to keep moving to the other stories.
No, don't apologize. There's no agenda here.
Okay. Are you going to get sued by Dvorak for saying that?
Yeah, probably. I just thought, oh, crap. I'm in trouble now. There is an agenda here. Anyway, I do hope this gets abandoned. I think it's terrible. There's actually a book called Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Savings Time. There's a website which... you know, you can get all these facts from if you want. That is sco.tt/time, changing the clocks for daylight saving time. I think that there's one problem is we'd have to debate whether when you change the clocks. But I love the world time. I think we should just have a world time. I love that.
It's one step closer to the United Federation of Planets, you guys. That's all I'm saying.
It is. It's totally a science fiction trope.
Once we start having interstellar...
It's very sci-fi.
Once we have interplanetary commerce and leisure and other activities, we will need
matching
a more
standard Earth time. Futuristic outfits.
You always know you're reading sci-fi when you see there's a black president. Then you know that this is the future, right?
Or the recent past, dude.
Or the last. What was it Zach Galifianakis asked Barack Obama? How does it feel being the last black president?
No, he asked Hillary Clinton, "What are you concerned about being young people's first white president?" Or something like that.
That's funny, too.
Yeah.
But now apparently that wasn't a concern.
Their first orange president.
Yeah. That's good. We're diversity. All right, so it's not going to happen, but Clayton Morris is starting this as well, and he's getting behind it, and I agree. I think we should get rid of this. Here's another crusade that's completely hopeless. The inventor of the World Wide Web, Tim Berners-Lee, says online political advertising should be regulated.
He thinks
that the problem is the targeted advertisements on Facebook and Google that no one sees except the intended recipient, right?
Yeah.
These carefully targeted advertising allows a campaign, he says, to say completely different, possibly conflicting things to different groups. Of course,
At scale.
At scale. Who the hell's going to regulate this?
Exactly. You can't regulate
it. Oh, I don't know. If only we had a functioning government, there might be a role. We've regulated a lot of other things in the past.
That is called
regulation.
They never get regulated. That's a free speech issue, right?
So, is there value, though, in... So the Fairness Doctrine, which is...
Long gone. I remember it, though, because I used to work in radio.
Long gone. Yep. Cable news... killed the Fairness Doctrine.
Yep.
But is there some value in revisiting this concept for the internet? Like, I don't know.
You know, it's funny how your battles change because, you know, maybe a few years ago you might have said, we should bring back the Fairness Doctrine. Now we just like to bring back fairness.
Yeah.
You know, the FCC is basically throwing out all regulations, including regulations that prohibit phone companies from stealing information about you and selling it to the highest bidder. That's gone. Net neutrality, forget that. I mean,
Let me scare the pants off of everybody listening to the show.
Oh, yes.
Please. So, you can't. I'm not wearing any pants.
I was going to say,
everyone
too
else,
late.
I should say.
But my pants are still on. You can scare me, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you.
He's ready.
So you mentioned the column that I wrote that's on the rundown. This is essentially what it's about. So right now, there are lots of people looking at social posts. HR departments, insurance companies, the government is actually talking about demanding that visitors from certain countries hand over their passwords to their social network so they can see who you're following and what you're reading.
I believe that's happening here in the U.S., right?
Yeah, yes. Lots and lots of people, and remember that people, are looking at social, and it's not that effective because people are poor processors. So what we're entering into is an era where artificial intelligence will automatically identify which are your profiles, scan every post you've ever posted, every comment you've ever commented on, every person you've ever followed, everyone who follows you, crunch all that numbers and profile you so specifically. So you get into political advertising, they will send each and every person a very customized ad pushing the exact one button that you really care about the most. And this is the threat. Artificial intelligence is going to make profiling people very efficient. Now, you look at what's happening in China. They have this thing called the social credit score. They have four areas where they give everybody a score.
This is like out of Black Mirror.
It's out of Black Mirror, exactly. It's so really what China's is doing is like they look at your credit score, the financial stuff. They look at your debt, whatever is going on there. They look at your relationship with the law. If you had parking tickets, you've been arrested, you've been suspected, whatever. And they look at your social networking posts and they give you an overall score. So you can raise the score by saying nice things about the Chinese Communist Party. You get a lower score if you don't pay your debt on time or whatever. And they've already banned almost 7 million people from riding the train in China because of the debts that they didn't pay.
Wow.
And they want to make it so that people who are untrustworthy in general can't move, can't do anything, can't get a job, can't do all these things. This is the future because an artificial intelligence will radically accelerate the effectiveness of artificially intelligence-based trust metrics for every industry. So the insurance industry wants to know what kind of a risk you are. And the universities want to know what kind of an academic you'll be. And they'll be able to custom tailor it in a way that's beyond our imagination. And yes, it is just like Black Mirror.
And if you
requiring
still
genetic
have your-
testing, it's another
yeah.
one.
Yeah, and if you still have your pants on, let me add to this that these assessments, these scores are not just based on like you in a vacuum starting from the point of your birth. History is baked into all these scorings. Who's more likely to be arrested?
Right.
Who's less likely to have access to capital and run up debts? Who will more likely to have a prison history or some financial troubles? That skews heavily along class, gender, and racial lines, which goes beyond any individual single act.
Well,
and
so in a way, that would argue
in the future are going to build on the historical profiling that we've already seen happen. So we're making a racist Skynet.
In a way, that would argue for you to actually create a social profile to post.
But who will have the resources to do that?
Absent that, people are going to look at you and say, well, he looks like a terrorist.
Yeah.
At least if you have a social media history and, they at least are basing it on more information than the color of your skin or what kind of hat you wear.
The challenge is that all of these tools that Mike just talked about, they will be used to claim we're not discriminating based on skin color.
Right.
Because they'll be like, no, it's a neutral science score. There's nothing that says black or African American. There's nothing that says Muslim or even Pakistani in there. But somehow all these indicators will be a proxy for black and Muslim.
Sure.
And how much hummus have you bought in the last year? Data caused by systematic oppression of people means that the system itself in the future will inherently be biased.
On the other hand, you quote
it's
here
worse before it gets better.
You quote in your article, Mike, that according to a Career Builder survey, 60% of employers look at social media posts of prospective employees.
Yeah.
I mean, we do that.
Yep. Yeah.
Is there something wrong with doing that?
You're not very good at it because you're a human being. Okay, so you can get.
Yeah, I just look at what you tweeted and what you Facebooked, and that sounds fun.
But you're not profiling. You're getting a sense. Are there any? You know, do I see anything incendiary?
Is this person a nut job, or they spend every night drinking?
But profiling will take things that look super innocuous. This person likes this kind of tennis shoes, and people who like this kind of tennis shoes and also like hummus, but also have been to Brooklyn. Those people are more likely, 20% more likely to do XYZ. It's like a human brain can't even begin to think like that. But here's one of the worst aspects of this.
You are saying in public, though, stuff about yourself.
Yes, but you can't.
Yeah, but most of these statements, first of all, they're implicit. I'm making a statement basically by the geolocation of my phone. If I visit a mosque, I'm making a statement. But it's not a statement in the traditional definition of speech. It, my mere existence is speech in a data-rich networked world.
Yeah.
And so we're being judged by statements. It's not just social media postings that are being roped in. It's behavior and presence, physical presence, and association with other individuals. So they're going to map. You know, Uber knows who Muslims are by their prayer breaks, you know, in terms of the time of day that they're offline from their routes. They didn't ask that question, but they inferred it. So did those drivers make a statement declaring their Islamic faith?
An AI will be able to make go further. So they'll look at who you know and who they know. So people that you have never even met will affect your score. And one of the worst parts about this is that you'll never know. All this action will happen behind the scenes. When you don't get the job, you'll never know that it was an AI's judgment about your social post that actually led to you not getting the job.
And the scariest part is that things like Google's one true answer are wrong.
Yes.
Often.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And so we are not at a stage yet in artificial intelligence and deep machine learning to where they can make a truly accurate representation of who you are with that data. Like, machines still make mistakes because they are programmed by people.
That's right. Exactly right. But the people who run these machines don't realize that. Google won't accept the fact that their AI doesn't work often.
This is
they realize it. They're just willing to accept it. And if you want to go deep, Kathy O'Neill's written a great book on this subject, Weapons of Math Destruction.
How did I have that up ready to go even before you said anything?
Because we abolished time zones. We're all in sync right now.
I was going to bring this up because we interviewed our interviewer on triangulation. That's exactly the point of this book, is that big data may be agnostic, but the silly algorithms we apply to it often express our own bias into the data, and then the data can be used against us.
It's how you interpret it.
Right. Remember Microsoft's Tay? So they said, we're going to have this artificial intelligent chatbot out there, and it'll just harvest the sentiment of people.
She was instantly taught to be racist.
And they taught,
just a terrible idea.
Yeah. Everybody should read Weapons of Math Destruction, Kathy O'Neill's great book, and her blog talks more about this at mathbabe.org. She's a trained mathematician. She was a quant and realized working in Wall Street as a quant for a hedge fund that the numbers and the data were one thing, but the way it was interpreted was another thing entirely, and that so many people don't understand statistics and math,
right?
And yet are quick to judge based on information that they see in the data.
Here's something that may emerge from this. First of all, I won't be able to wear pants again after this episode.
Yeah,
that's all right.
Thank you look good
so
in shorts.
Much,
I've seen you in shorts. I know you.
So pantsless Baratunde is the future. Second is
.com.
There's a you know, getting to connect this like Google one answer, one false answer that Ashley brought up back to the Tim Berners-Lee regulation of political speech through ads. It's like we're in this arms race that we as individuals have already lost for the next multiple generations. So if you're a big company, like you're in this game, you're trying to win, you're Amazon, you're Google, you're Facebook, you're Capital One. I'm naming no company in particular, but if you have a lot of resources and technology, you can bend this world to your will in a way that no individual person could ever counter. And so we would need some way to balance that power out, which is why we developed labor unions to begin with, for example, right? Like no individual worker could stand up to like the family that owned the plant and all the other plants in the country. So you have collective bargaining. Is there a version of collective rights holding, collective data integrity, collective transparency, all these bots that are going to be used against us? Like, do we just have to flood the zone with our own bots and basically obscure some of the reality? If you're going to be auto-magically profiling me, then I'm going to do as much as I can with the same tech tools and my colleagues to throw you off and have essentially like countermeasures to preserve some sense of individuality and freedom. Because ultimately this is like, we're coming down to what freedom is at this point. If your future is prescribed by a score based on BS history and super imprecise science, that's not free. And your choices are no longer your own. So this is like an epic battle, and I'm not sure what we do about it, but it seems like some sort of organizing around and against the one-sided use of these weapons is in order.
So what you're saying, in effect, is that the ultimate defense in the future will be disinformation.
Yes. I've said that all along, though. You should cultivate your social presence to project the image that you wish to project.
Yeah.
But that's also so hard, because when you promote disinformation, you also promote fake news, false facts.
No, like, only about you, though.
It's so tough.
Only about you. I'm promoting false news about myself. That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think of it. Yeah, Leo's like, I'm king of a small island nation. Yeah, and,
Okay. I'm not saying anything about you. I'm saying only about me. And aren't I a great person? Aren't I wonderful? Look at all these great things. I tell teenagers that all the time in high school. If you don't create, seriously, if you don't create.
Oh, I thought you meant you told teenagers.
Well, they're
teenagers
very good at that.
I always tell them how great I am. But after I tell them that.
Hello, fellow kids.
Yes.
Hello, fellow youths.
I tell the youths, you ought to have a website. You ought to be careful about what you're posting on Facebook. You got to consider the fact that you're creating a persona. And if you don't, and dial, but the thing is, if you decide not to, if you say, oh, I'm only using Snapchat, then that vacuum will be filled by whoever wants to fill it. That's even worse. So you need to get out there and present yourself, I think.
Yeah.
That's one defense.
You might be leading them to the slaughter.
Really? What should they
do?
What should they do?
Delete
your accounts.
No, because the absence of an account,
then suspicious.
Then when
it's
you're
like not
when
having
you're,
a credit, it's like not having credit. It's I can't give you, I don't trust you, I don't know what you're even about at all.
No, because it's even worse than that, because the way
it's
Google
so
works.
Black Mirror. Yeah.
It's even worse
it is
than
really
that.
Black Mirror,
because
so
let's say I'm a smart kid. I have no Facebook, no Twitter. If I use anything, I use Snapchat, it gets dissolved. But then my worst enemy from trigonometry decides to post a video of me peeing on a wall. That's what Google finds. So that means that somebody else is now in control of your reputation, because you did nothing to create a reputation.
Yeah.
So that's my point, is that if you don't create one, then anybody who says anything about you, that's now the Google result.
Right. It'll be a service.
It's a real terrible Sophie's Choice situation.
Yep.
Yeah, and maybe when you talk to these teenagers like you do on a regular basis for some reason, if you are also encouraging them to be as critical and as active in the creation of this world as possible. I think if we just tell people, you need a website, you need a MySpace account, you need a Twitter account, you need an Oculus, that's the feeding to the slaughter that I'm concerned about.
Yeah,
if we're
I understand.
Just getting them used to filling up these data troughs for these companies without questioning what happens to that data, without demanding like a user bill of rights for your information, then pair that request to participate with like what full participation means, which is just like democracy. Like, you don't just get to live here. You have to vote. You got to do jury duty. Like, there's some active steps you got to take. And so I think in the techie world, we should start demanding from our fellow youths some challenging and some criticism, or they'll be feeding themselves to a mill that will chew them up.
I will from now. Actually, they don't let me talk to teenagers anymore. But if I were, I would. No, because my kids were teenagers once. And I used to speak at the high school and stuff. And, you know, they always ask tech people, can you talk to our kids about tech? Because, you know, the teachers don't.
And you go there and say, don't do it.
Well, I'd say,
don't.
I don't know what to say now. But actually, I think you actually say a very good thing. You should be an activist. You need to participate. And that's really important, too. And make sure that people aren't misusing that information that you're posting.
And that's a probably healthier advice than a massive multi-sided disinformation campaign which destroys a sense of truth, facts, and reality.
I didn't say they should lie. I should.
No, that was basically my implied advice. I'm sort of updating my testimony a la Jeff Sessions to add that I'm not pro mass disinformation. I'm just trying to think on my feet.
No,
about
you're actually right.
Noted, and we will amend the official transcripts.
Yeah. Don't lie. I agree with you. Don't lie. But at the same time, if you don't post anything, then you're a little bit at risk.
And don't pee on the wall.
And actually, probably, if you're going to pee on the wall, make sure nobody around has a camera phone, which is pretty much
impossible. Everybody does.
Good advice.
So don't do that.
Right. I'd share that. Yeah.
Find a nice bathroom, that's all I'm saying.
Our show today, and we're going to take a break, come back with more. This is a good panel. There's a lot to talk about. Find something else that you think will be a deep, rich subject for our conversation. Please.
Okay.
All right. Our show today brought to you by The Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device. It's Bluetooth. It's awesome. It pairs with your phone. It's about the size of a quarter. It's lighter than a quarter. It's anodized aluminum. It will go on a whole bunch of things. I certainly have one on my keychain. But you could put it on your bicycle, put it underneath the seat. You could put it anywhere that, you know, you don't want to lose something. And then you pair it to your phone. You can have up to 10 tracker devices paired to your phone. If they've got two-way separation alerts. This is all customizable. So, for instance, if you leave your keys behind, your phone howls. You leave your phone behind, the tracker howls. There's a button on the tracker you can press that will get your phone to go beep, beep, beep. You know, if you really love the Find My iPhone feature, who doesn't, right? That's a great, brilliant feature. Android does it, too. This is like that for everything. Know where everything is at any time. Now, it is Bluetooth, so that means after 100 feet, you're going to lose sight of your tracker. But here's the good news. Tracker has the world's largest crowd GPS network. See, there's 4.5 million trackers all over the world. And whenever you come within, your tracker comes within the purview of somebody who has the software running on their phone, another tracker owner, their phone will go, oh, I see Leo's tracker. Hey, and then ping my phone and say, hey, your keys, they're in Abu Dhabi. How'd they get there? I don't know, but that's where they are right now. And that is called crowdsourced tracking. It's awesome. We've got the custom laser engraving. These are great if you put it on a pet. Small enough, light enough for a pet. They have a waterproof enclosure you can put on it. You can also have image printing. They use a really neat UV LED technology that will not rub off. They have a variety of other accessories. And here's a really great deal. If you go right now to thetracker.com and place your order, order as many trackers and other accessories as you need, and then enter the promo code TWIT, they're going to throw in an extra Tracker Bravo with any order. An extra Tracker Bravo free with any order when you use the offer code TWIT. I love the tracker. You can, unlike some of these other devices, the battery is replaceable. You don't throw it out when the battery dies. You can put a new battery in, just one of those little coin-sized batteries you get at the drugstore. And that is a nice thing, too. 30-day money-back guarantee. No reason not to give it a try. TheTracker.com. And the promo code TWIT will get you a free
good
tracker. Bravo. I put them in my suitcase in my luggage. That's also a great idea.
Yeah.
All right. I there's many, many stories we could talk about. But we've had so much fun with the first two or three.
Well, can I quickly... I don't mean to plug an article I wrote.
Go right ahead.
But I discovered in writing an article, so as you know, I'm a digital nomad. I live nomadically, oftentimes abroad, sometimes in the U.S. And this lifestyle started in the 90s. The idea for it was arrived at by a Hitachi executive who wrote a book called Digital Nomad. And it was an obscure thing. Oh. That book was ignored. Yeah.
Oh.
And then Tim Ferriss in 4-Hour Workweek popularized the idea a lot more than he did. That was about 10 years ago now that book was written. And wow. Now there's something that I call the Digital Nomad Industrial Complex. There are so many companies out there that provide all kinds of services for digital nomads, from incredible apps, and everybody can use these services, anybody who travels. Right. But you know, incredible apps, incredible, like, the biggest thing is that you can be a digital nomad temporarily, like for a week or a month or 2 months. So there are some where you take a train across Africa. There are others where you live with a bunch of people in different cities and you can switch. There's a service where you throw your house into the mix, and then you can move every month to a new house of another member while other people are living in your house. And when you're done, you call it quits and you go back to your house. You don't have to sell your house to live abroad for 2 years or something like that. There's so much creativity in this. There are all kinds of things where they'll rent you a ticket for $10 so you can enter a country without a return ticket, because a lot of countries don't let you enter if you don't have a return ticket. And you know, it's a wonderful world. This is on Fast Company. You can find it and search for it and stuff like that. But it's just an amazing thing to check out, this world of digital nomad living. And if I can plug one thing, Leo,
Every time you talk about this, I want to do it, well, but unfortunately I'm kind of stuck here.
Well, I told you twice on this show though, when I've been on the show, that my wife is working on a secret project.
Oh yeah.
And that secret project is called Gastronomad Experiences. And so you get to be a digital nomad foodie for about a week, give or take a couple of days, depending on the
place. Oh, I like this
idea. So go to gastronomad.net.
Please tell me Instagram is sponsoring your wife for this. This is well, they're literally made for this.
They're going
to
want
pretty pictures of food around the world. Come
no
on.
Kidding.
Yeah. So the next two are the Barcelona experience and the Morocco experience. Those are happening later this year.
Oh,
what's the website?
Gastronomad.net.
I want to go to there.
Yes. So what, as you know, my wife is a super foodie, like,
she's
expert.
Great. One of the best cooks I've ever met.
She knows all these people in Barcelona, for example, are going to come and we're going to do cheese tasting and wine. We're
going to go to wineries. I'm on my way.
We're going to have cooking classes. You learn to make paella and things like that. And so it's just a deep dive into Catalonia cooking, in that case, and Morocco, the Moroccan food scene in Fez. You know, Fez is not just a hat. You know that, right?
Is your wife basically letting everybody be Anthony Bourdain?
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like we have just scaled Anthony Bourdain.
Exactly.
That's a dream. This
so
is
if
amazing.
You watch his show, you know, that's what it's all about. Because food is more than food. Food is a window into a culture.
So this is really a new business for you.
It's a new business.
Yeah,
it's mostly my wife's business, and I'm sort of an employee of her business. To a certain extent, but it's a new business that she's launching.
So you're going to it'd be like a tour. People would buy this and go on a tour with you, or
it's in one place. So it's focused on the city. So the Barcelona experience, she's already rented the place. It's a big, beautiful, old apartment house, well appointed.
Nice.
Everybody goes and stays in the same place from morning to night. It's like classes, adventures, go to places, do things, but it's all around and in the city.
This is a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. It's going to be great. And it's also, we have to do the research, right? So we're going to be going to Barcelona in a couple of months. We're going to be going to Morocco to, like, we have to
terrible
life. Huh?
It's all deductible.
Sounds like so difficult.
No, they're suffering. This is work.
We bleed.
I think we should have a Williamsburg gastronomad, and you could have a guest gastronomad with Baratunde Thurston.
That'd be awesome.
I got to clarify. I don't want to give away my actual address.
But you have to wear pants, though.
I do not, nor have I ever lived in Williamsburg. I do live in Brooklyn.
I just made that up. I know you live in the Heights. I know.
Southern parts of Brooklyn. That is, I live south of Williamsburg. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well, that's close enough.
You live right next door to Lin-Manuel Miranda, right?
That's right.
Me and Lin, we're like this. You know,
you guys are all best friends, I'm assuming.
I am. Nonstop.
Rest of the world, all of Brooklyn is of a piece. You know, you guys in Brooklyn, you got all these different neighborhoods. It's Brooklyn to us.
That's great.
So,
is your wife working with Airbnb on any of this, Mike? This sounds very.
She is not working with the company, but she's working through Airbnb. She's like the Airbnb master. I mean, she spends enormous amounts of time on Airbnb, constantly looking for these amazing places.
This looks like a lot of
fun. And the places that she's locked down for both Morocco and for Barcelona are fantastic. The place in Morocco is a 400-year-old riad that we're going to be staying in. It is
what's
exquisite.
A riad?
A riad is like a Moroccan style compound house. It's like a house where everything's around a central area and have very tall ceilings and very beautiful stuff.
Riyadh was also a guy on my high school wrestling team. So
not for him.
So is the house named after him, or is he named after the house?
And he's apparently a bigger deal than I imagined. I should have been nicer to him.
Yeah. So, that's a good idea. I'm glad you're doing this.
Yeah. I'm really excited.
Gastronomad.net if you want to know more. And the first two are Barcelona in September. And when is Morocco going to be?
Probably at the end of September. So they're probably going to bang those out in rapid succession.
Right.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yep. And then we're already planning the ones for next year. So we're going to be going to Prosecco in a month and do deep research in Prosecco. Now, Prosecco has not been overwhelmed with tourists yet.
Deep work comes back. I love this guy.
And so, we're going to be deep work tasting wine. So, we're staying in this like ancient farmhouse and stuff like that. But this is what we're doing, and it's just really exciting, and we invite everybody to check it out and come along, because and we want to get you and Lisa to
come. I'm in.
We'll comp it.
I'm in. No, don't comp it. But I'm in. That sounds
love
like
to have
a lot
you.
Of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
You guys want to talk about Uber?
Oh, yeah. What horrors have they inflicted?
What have they done now?
No, that's the news.
This week, as their COO.
There was no news about Uber this week.
That's fake news.
That's
fake news.
I don't believe you.
How many delete Ubers? How many delete Ubers do we have here?
Oh, and I did it before it was fashionable. But before
that's
it was
a T-shirt.
Before it was trending because,
I deleted Uber before it was cool.
Business practices, man. I live in New York. Juno gives a much better split to the drivers. Juno only takes 10% commission versus a closer to 30% roughly for Uber. Juno gives a driver a phone number they can call when they're experiencing issues rather than just forcing text messaging. And you can tip, you know, and Lyft allows you to tip as well. I think it's really, you know, if someone has gone above and beyond, which a lot of these drivers do because they're trying to maintain this 5-star rating. So I've had drivers help me with my luggage, make sure I get safely into my house, do my taxes for me. Like, these guys are doing a lot of extra work. And so
wait,
I need
that driver. Can you call
you
me?
You know, it's the luck of the draw. But so if you can't represent that, if you can't, you know, account for that financially, it just sends a weird signal. And then plus the early culture set, all the stuff that's coming out later sort of validates it.
Yeah.
But I think company culture is so important now. And we have, you know, the beauty, unlike our broadband environment, we have choices in most places, and certainly between Uber and Lyft in most places. And so I'm going to choose to spend my money in a place that is less horrifically misaligned with my values.
I have to say, a lot of so the first big Uber free experiments going on right now in Austin, Texas, mm-hmm. South by Southwest began this week.
Yep.
And already there are other ride sharing solutions. Already they're having massive problems. Ride Austin, which is one of the local ride hailing alternatives, was down for 5 hours. Here's Ryan Hoover of Product Hunt. He spent an hour trying to find a ride. Austin is broken without Uber or Lyft. I should point out the reason there is no Uber or Lyft in Austin is because Austin didn't want them.
Right.
And said you can't be here. But there are other local. I like the idea of local ride sharing apps. You lose, I guess, some of the economy of scale.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I live in LA, so Houston, I just have a car. It's like
wait a minute.
What?
Yeah, I just drive myself, and it's super weird.
I don't understand.
When I hear other people say they would die without like Uber or Lyft, I'm like, I can't remember the last time.
So you drive yourself, it's a self-driving car.
Self-driven.
I am my car's own self-driver. Yeah, that's it.
I
pre-ordered a Model 3 last year, so I'm I'm dying for my robot car to like take me in traffic.
It'll drive you around.
More than Lyft, can we just live the Jetsons and have my robot car take me to work? That's all I care about.
And then fold up into a suitcase.
Your robot car is going to take you to the moon. That's the trick. When Elon says we're going to the moon, he means like we, like people with his car.
Look, my Model 3 can make it to TRAPPIST 1,
done. Ones with the seven planets.
Well, did you see that thing in Wired? It was a concept for I don't remember who was promoting this concept, but they have these pods, and the pod goes on this chassis for a self-driving car, and then you go to the airport, and then a drone picks up the pod, and you don't even get out. You go from driving around to flying in the same pod. I love that idea. It's never going to happen, but I love that idea.
Why can't we just live the Jetsons? Every day, this is the question I ask when I wake up.
There it is.
Pod car drone.
Airbus. I love that
pod
headline.
Pod car drone
is
also coming to NBC this fall on primetime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know,
pod car drone sounds like an updated.
So I'm looking. I see no bad stories about Uber this week, which in itself is a story since they've really kind of.
There was one story where the CEO was hiring a person to make him less of a
COO.
Yeah.
Hiring a COO.
Like a coach, right? He's like, I've realized like I'm not such a great person sometimes.
Well, that's a good thing.
A COO, a chief operating officer to make sure that he operates not like a jerk.
These headlines are, Recode is amazing. Uber CEO Travis Kalanick just told staff he's hiring a COO to help him.
Well, that's fair.
I just need some help. It sounds like
maybe he just needs a life coach.
He's a psychiatrist.
Does he just need a life coach? Maybe that's better.
This is what Travis said. Travis Kalanick, the CEO of Uber, said he's looking for a peer who can partner with me to write the next chapter in our journey. Maybe he needs an editor.
Yeah, right. Translation. Don't let me be a jerk anymore because I want to get really, really rich.
But Uber's not going away, is it?
No. But you shared there were some articles about how. Let me rewind. I was speaking with somebody at a tech comp who works at a tech company a few months ago talking about how change actually happens. And this person worked at a company that went through a public scolding and a lot of shame and a lot of negative headlines. And what changed it inside the company, what changed their practices, wasn't the public outcry. In fact, that made people dig in more.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it was like, it was us versus them. Yeah. It was like time zones, right? Yeah. The thing that's destroying humanity, Mike. And so what actually affected change was that the employees felt bad about working there. Like, the news was so bad that it affected their morale. People were literally drinking at work, not in a fun way, not with, like, beer pong on Fridays, like, at their desk alone with whiskey. And they were ashamed to tell their friends where
they
worked.
Sounds like a newsroom.
And so – or the White House. But, you know, so there's – I think when there's a tipping point sometimes in culture where if you are part of the organization, you know, you signed up, people joined Uber to make money, probably first and foremost, to be a part of some disruptive change, maybe like limited scope of what disruption can mean in society. But they didn't sign up for like fully endorsed at the executive level sexual harassment and dismissal. They didn't sign up for a CEO who berates his driving partner on camera and manspreads like a ridiculous. Like, that was the most offensive thing about that video to me. It was like, you're taking up like three seats with your knees, dude. So if there's pressure building inside of Uber against these practices, like, that's the thing to watch out for, because the trending topics and the, you know, the public outcry, that ebbs and flows. People protest, then they stop. People have to go back to work. People have to use an Uber to get there sometimes. But if the employees of Uber are feeling frustrated, angry, upset, and motivated to bring about change, then we'll probably see something shift, much more than Travis's statements about trying to be a better person through hiring a COO.
That's actually a really, I think, astute point.
Change comes from the inside. We all learned this when we were in, like, kindergarten.
And we can affect it from the outside. We in the media can use shame and ridicule.
Yeah. Sure.
Because without that external pressure, those employees probably wouldn't feel so bad.
Right.
But there's this moral point where you look up and you say, what am I a part of? And if you feel like I am part of something I didn't sign up for. And so the stories I was getting to that are coming out are other employees looking at people who excelled at Uber as like a negative mark. They're like, wait, you thrived in a culture of misogyny? I don't know if you're right for, you know, SpaceX or Gastro.
Yeah.
No, Nomad or whatever the company might be.
You can't, though, sure. And this is the information which broke this story, Amira Friday writing, says that privately two Uber investors who spoke to the information expressed confidence in Mr. Kalanick to right the ship, said one of them. And I have to say, this is probably the feeling of a lot of investors and employees. You can't ignore the sheer scale of what he's built and the strategy. Can he be radically changed? I think so. Can you bring in a Sheryl Sandberg, for instance? She's Mark Zuckerberg's number two at Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd go there before looking for a major change. Let things play out a little bit. There doesn't seem to be on the board anyway any interest at all or among investors in changing the leadership.
Part of this is part of the story here is that the things that make companies successful startups are the things that can kill them when they're big companies.
Uber and so, had to be pugnacious. They had to be.
Yeah,
gloves off, don't care what the law
extent.
Is, don't care what's right, just get it done, and that's what put them where on the map. But if they don't change that culture that made them possible, then they're gonna go away. So
right. when you scale a company culture, or when you scale a company, you also scale your culture. And that is why Uber is facing so many problems now, because this is now a systematic problem throughout the company that has scaled to an unmanageable level.
Yes.
Yeah. They got big breaking rules. Like, they were proud of it. You know, they would undermine, you know, governments who didn't want them there. They were hyped so aggressively competitive, and there's something admirable about it. Honestly, like, you got the killer instincts. Like,
sure.
I admire it. It's why people watch sports. It's why people like winners in general.
But he breaks all the rules. Like, it's exciting.
Yeah, but then you're like 5 years in, you're like, wait, this dude's breaking a lot of rules.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Like, wait a minute.
Oops.
I don't like this now. Well, I thought it was really interesting. There was an article that said, to your point, Baratunda, there was an article about how people were waiting to see how many people left Uber after they got their profit-sharing bonuses.
When is that?
Profit-sharing.
I wonder when that is.
I think it's like this week or next week.
Oh,
like, it's very
alert on Uber right now.
Hold on a second. I'm sorry.
CNBC Newsline.
Autoplay.
By the way, can you tell your boss not to do it on CNET either? Because it's
listen.
She's the thing playing though.
I know. At
it's
least
an issue that's real close to my heart here.
At least if it's Ashley Esqueta.
I can assure you that if it's a video with me that autoplays, you will at least be entertained.
I enjoy it, and that's the difference. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, tech veteran says he's wary of hiring someone who did well at Uber. I think that.
Well, this is the other aspect of this is the reputation. In order to write their reputation, they can't just be a normally ethical company, if that's an oxymoron. They have to be super, super ethical now. Look at Bill Gates. Bill Gates was, people don't remember the Bill Gates when he wasn't so warm and fuzzy. He used to be the biggest jerk in tech. And he had a terrible reputation for being rapacious and just hyper aggressive. And it took him, you know, curing major diseases and spending all of his money on saving lives for people to go, yeah, I guess he's okay. Yeah. And so
he had to try to wipe out malaria.
Malaria, that's what
I
it took.
I think the real turning point was when he started doing those Reddit Secret Santas. Let's
those
all be honest.
Those are amazing. Yeah.
I'll be real here. That was his un-Grinch moment. That was when his heart grew three sizes.
The un-Grinching. It's a process.
Yeah, the un-Grinching of Bill Gates. That's going to be the next book that I write.
I think he's un-Grinched. We'll just call it un-Grinched. Yeah.
Un-Grinched. Yeah. The un-Grinched. The story of Bill Gates.
The story of Bill Gates.
So there is a precedent. It can happen. But yeah, Bill Gates doesn't run Microsoft anymore, so there's a clear direction.
Yeah. Did you see that was a funny video. Did we play this last week, Carsten, of Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates talking? Because Mark, as you know...
So awkward.
Great acting.
Did we play it last week?
Great acting.
Truly great acting. Yes. We need to give the Oscar to this.
Yes, we did.
We did. All right. So you saw it last week. Mark and Bill sat down to eat some goldfish and talk about Mark's honorary degree.
Like living goldfish to prove how tough they are?
No, just I zoomed in to find out. It was crackers.
Okay, good.
Yeah, just checking.
Do you guys feel like he got that degree, that Zuck got that honorary degree at Harvard because somebody at Snapchat did it first, or?
No, Harvard wants money.
Evan Spiegel an honorary degree?
I would love it so much if I heard that Evan Spiegel had gotten an honorary degree at Harvard. If Mark Zuckerberg was like, I want one of those.
Need that too, man.
I need that too.
How much
Snapchat does it? We're doing it.
Just give me a number. How big a check do I have to write?
That's right.
Well, you're a Harvard. Is there a Zuckerberg library or a Zuckerberg garden, Baratunde, or
pond, maybe?
Let me tap into the alumni answer.
You know everything, don't you?
Yeah, tap into. No, as far as I know, there's nothing named after him on campus.
I want to say that I'm very proud of Yale.
Maybe there will be now.
I'm very proud of Yale because Yale renamed Calhoun College. Remember, Yale's had a college named after one of the
John C. Calhoun,
of the worst proponents of slavery, member of Congress John C. Calhoun. Eventually, people said, "You know, maybe we should have this Calhoun College." And what did they name it? They loved it. They named it Hopper College.
Grace Hopper, after Grace Hopper.
After Grace Hopper, I think. I don't know if it's the Grace Hopper College or Hopper College.
Hopper College,
but I think they'd have a great intramural softball team if they're called the Hoppers. I think it'd be awesome.
It. Yeah. The entomology lab should have been named after Grace Hopper. She invented the bug.
She invented the bug. All right. Who went out and bought a Switch this week?
I've been trying to buy a Switch since December.
Ashley Esqueza.
How do you get one?
You said it really well once, and we can drop that in digitally.
Ashley Esqueza.
My people are on it, but they're not.
I didn't get in line. I just went to eBay and bought it. Does that count?
You eBayed it? No, that doesn't count.
You're not
a real gamer.
I didn't pay my dues, but I did get one.
Ashley, what was your process? How did you end up with this?
Stayed
up late the night of the original event in January, and my best friend Mike and I sort of knew that some pre-order would open at some point. I think if it hadn't opened that night, we would have been extremely tired and not in a good place the next day, but we stayed up, and then I may have fallen asleep on the couch, and I left my ringer on because I knew he'd be awake, and then he texted me and said they're up. And so I actually pre-ordered two. I got one for Amazon, one from Amazon and one from Best Buy for pickup, but I didn't trust Best Buy, so I left the Amazon pre-order open. And then it turned out Amazon had a bunch of delivery problems with the Switch, so I did end up getting both though. So I went to the midnight two. I ended up selling one of them to my one of my good friends who didn't get a pre-order. So she had been really busy with work and was dying to have one on launch day for Zelda. So I had her take that one, and then I went and picked up my Neon one at Best Buy for at a midnight launch, which I have to say I was really impressed. The Best Buy launch was really smooth. They had three tables set up, and they let the pre-orders walk in first. about 15 minutes before midnight and pick out all of the extra accessories and amiibo and anything they had in stock, strategy guides, whatever. And and just say like, if you need a pro controller or whatever, we have that here. I was able to buy a couple of things. I got a couple of pro controllers. I got some amiibo, and I bought, I already had a case from Amazon coming. So I ended up buying all of that and then leaving. It was a very easy process. So I was very impressed with the whole thing. And then I went home and promptly fell asleep because I'm an old woman.
So I've heard vicious rumors that the screen gets scratched really easy. Ooh. Is that true?
So the dock, some of the docks are reported to be a little bit bent. So when you put in the actual switch into the dock, some people are reporting the bottom left in particular is getting scratched up. So just be really careful when you put your switch into the dock. Don't fling it out and throw it back in there. And also, you know, a screen protector, I think, is always a good idea for anything like the switch that you're carrying around. I mean, a phone, like, I think has kind of a little, I feel like I want to say that the screens on our cell phones are probably a little bit better in terms of quality, Gorilla Glass, things like that, and that are a little more scratch proof. But I would say just throw a screen protector on it if you're going to be throwing it in a bag.
I don't think I'm ever going to use the dock. I think I just see it as a portable device. Not that I've been able to get my hands on it. My 14-year-old took it and I haven't seen it since.
You'll never see it again because Zelda is.
You should have put a tracker on it, Leo.
Yeah.
There you go. Get a tracker. Put it right on the back.
Techie question. So I misrepresented myself. I did not try to buy a Switch in December. That was impossible. I tried to get the NES Classic.
Oh, yeah. Who did?
Oh, the little NES Classic. I gave up.
What can someone walk me through what's the Switch? What's the Classic? What are these two Nintendo products I cannot get?
So the
Classic is the little tiny NES. So it's real small, and you have actual old school NES controller that comes with it, and you can play 30 NES games.
Is it They're made all, by like, Nintendo, pre-loaded. Or is it a third
it's
party?
It's made by Nintendo.
Oh, okay.
Right. And that's the first one that we've seen that Nintendo has actually made, manufactured, like put out there for everybody to play old school NES games.
And it's cute. So, it's like a little NES.
It's really cute. Yeah. It is. It's actually, it's adorable because it's just so small. It's like a little kind of a hockey puck. I could say it's really adorable. And then, the controller is as wide as the system itself. Like the real normal sized NES controller is the same width as the NES Classic, which is pretty cool. So that was the big thing. That was a huge holiday gift. Like you could not find one of these for the holidays.
That was December. And I still. So then the Switch is not that. The Switch is a new thing?
It's a new thing.
The Switch is Nintendo's new console. So this is a hybrid handheld and entertainment console that you can dock. There's a dock that you put a little kind of tablet into, and then you can play on your television. But then it's actually really seamless. You just pull it out of the dock and it switches almost instantaneously to the actual Switch. And then there are little controllers that you can remove from the sides called Joy-Cons. They call them Joy-Cons. Like it's so share the joy. That's like their big thing. I've been playing Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild on this, which has been quite fun and really delightful and super interesting in terms of old open world Zelda games. I'm really enjoying it.
Can you play classics on the Switch?
No.
So not yet. They have not yet opened up the virtual console function on the Switch. They will at some point, I'm guessing probably maybe summer of this year. I know they'll probably want to have it up and running before the holiday, which is when they're going to want to sell a lot of Switches. There's a new Mario game coming out in probably around November of this year. So that'll be the big sort of push to sell the Switch. But it did do better. It's the best console launch they've ever had. So
whoa.
It doesn't mean it's going to be a really huge success.
Wii. Yeah. Nick Winfield.
The Wii was really a sleeper hit at first. Like people didn't really know what it was. And then all of a sudden it sold over 100 million units.
Nick Winfield at the failing New York Times interviewed the Nintendo of America president said it was the best two-day sales in their history. And Zelda was the best-selling standalone launch title in Nintendo history, beating Super Mario for the N64. So
that's the only good launch title they've really had since.
Yeah. But I think it did hurt the Switch that they only have that. They don't. It's not a lot of games yet, you know?
There's some indie games. I mean, Shovel Knight is really good. It's really fun, but a lot of people have already played that. And there's a lot of games that are indie games that people have already checked out on other consoles and other devices. So, but Zelda is such a big game. And
how many acres is that open world?
It's massive.
Thousands of acres.
I was talking to Tanner last night, one of Michael's friends. He said he spent half an hour just walking, trying to get to, like in real time, half an hour walking to a tour over there where there was supposed to be something. And there was a guy who said something and it was useless and that was it. Now he has to walk back a half an hour. So it's big. It's big.
Yeah, it's a really big, just the game space is really big. And also I read that great story. I think it might've been on Kotaku where Miyamoto, the guy who created Mario, when he got to play Legend of Zelda for the first time, he actually spent just hours climbing trees in the game because you had never been able to climb before in a Legend of Zelda game.
I can't. So someday I'm
very fascinated by this.
I hope to have a Switch of my own. I've completely lost it. And yeah, Zelda is, I guess, I'd never played. Shame to admit, but it's, I guess, not surprising for a person who can't pronounce a Sketha. But I have never played Zelda. And
me neither.
Me neither.
It's a legendary game franchise.
Yeah.
Legendary game franchise. But this is really the first time we've seen a true kind of open world.
Is this for my first Zelda, is this a good one?
I would say this is a great one.
Okay, good.
You might be spoiled for previous Zelda
games. I can't go back now. Yeah, maybe I should.
I mean, there's still some. I mean, look, Ocarina of Time, Twilight Princess, there's so many amazing Zelda games. I mean, they're all almost all of them are really, really good. Even the ones on DS are great. But I would say this one in particular is just, you can be so creative. I know I saw the other day on Twitter, so there's chickens in the game, but they're called cuckoos. And so in this particular Legend of Zelda game, somebody posted a video of them throwing a chicken at an enemy. And then the enemy, using its AI, swipes at the chicken, and the chicken gets mad, and the cuckoos come in a big swarm and kill the enemy. Yeah, this is the best thing I've ever seen in a Legend of Zelda game.
The guy is getting killed by chickens.
By poultry. Poultry.
This is grade A futuristic cuckoo combat system. Like, wow. I'm here for it. I love the creativity in the game. People are finding all sorts of ways to defeat enemies, accomplish tasks, solve puzzles. I mean, it's really, really fun. So but also very overwhelming. It can be very overwhelming. Yeah. There's a lot to do.
I feel like I'm just going to get in bed and play it until the battery dies.
Two and a half hours.
Yeah.
And then fall asleep.
Good. Thank you for that review. I'm excited about this, and I'm glad Nintendo had a success. It's not like they're going to go anywhere, but they haven't had a lot of hardware success since the Wii. The Wii U was kind of a flop, and it's nice to see them doing something that people are excited about. It's really a portable gaming system more than a console.
I think so. I mean, when it's in the dock, it's great. I love to play a game on my TV. It's fantastic. But the real beauty of this is being able to just pull it out of the dock. Right. There's some really great auto-saving features in it. Saves a lot and often. And you can just take it anywhere you want to go and just open it up and play Zelda, a console-level and console-quality Zelda game or any other. You know, Mario Odyssey will be out later this year. Splatoon, Mario Kart. I mean, there's a million games that you can play. But the one thing it doesn't have is the Vita used to have cellular capability. So you were able to sort of connect on the go. With this, you have to have Wi-Fi.
PS Vita. Yeah.
I've been actually like tethering my Switch to my phone.
Wow.
And that's how I like.
Wow. You can't play Zelda offline. There's not an offline.
You can.
Oh,
Wi-Fi. It's just a cartridge. But if I want to check my, if I want to go buy something in the store, the eShop, or if I want to check my friend requests or things like that, I just.
New for Nintendo. You can buy digital games. You can download games now.
So you were able to do that on the Wii U.
Oh, you were, okay.
Yeah, the eShop's been around for a while. And so it's just, I think it's a lot cleaner. It's a lot faster, I'll say that much. The eShop on Wii U was really slow.
Painful, yeah.
The loading screens were just brutal. I think overall, like, they're still really struggling, I think, a little bit with software. And Nintendo is a lot like Apple in a way, in that they really like this kind of closed ecosystem that makes it sort of hard for developers that are third party.
Jukebox. Yep.
It makes it hard for third party developers to sort of get in, but supposedly they have been opening the gates a little bit more to make it a little bit more developer friendly. And I hope that's the case because I love good games from just about anybody, obviously. And so the more the merrier.
It's an interesting. They've got Skyrim coming, Splatoon, Minecraft, NBA 2K. They've got some interesting titles, but they're all later this year. The next one is going to be Mario Kart.
I've got another technical question. One is I've discovered how to present myself very dramatically. Like I can get real close to the screen, but I can also recede like into the darkness.
Is the head like, of Beratunde come cool. to revenge.
More important than understanding how webcams work in the dark is is it still a feature of the Nintendo Switch that you are forced to blow on the cartridge at a high intensity?
No longer.
For the game to
no, and you should also
they let
not
that go.
Lick
they
them.
Abandoned that you feature.
You should also not lick them. This has been like this thing that's been going on. Apparently, Nintendo coated their cartridges for the Switch in some stuff that makes it taste incredibly bitter. I'm guessing that's probably to discourage like kids from putting it in their mouth because these cartridges are tiny. They're the size of they're like a little bit thinner than a micro SD card.
Yeah.
So
Okay.
They're really small. And so,
I licked one. I had to do it. It's bitter. And it's the same stuff that parents put on their kids' thumbs so they won't suck them. In fact, it's dentatonium benzoate, if you're curious. And in fact, one of our hosts kind of had a kind of weird flashback to when he used to suck his thumbs. He says, oh, my God, I hate that. I think it was Kevin Rose. On the new screensavers. He said,
I'm going to grab my Switch real quick and show you guys the cartridge.
All right, while you're doing that, we're going to take a break. Ashley Esquetha is together with us, along with Baratunde Thurston and Mike Elgin.
Have you been sucking your thumb?
I've been sucking my thumb, and the dentifrice benzoate has gotten to me. Our show today brought to you by Texture. If you like magazines, who doesn't? Really, some of the best writing in the world.
Magazines.
I know. Thank God, good journalism still happens in the Rolling Stone and Vanity Fair, but there's also Consumer Reports and there's photojournalism from National Geographic. Here's a way to get them all without subscribing, without buying the newsstand editions at their horrific prices, and get them on your iPad or your iPhone or your Android device. It's called Texture. Texture is Netflix for magazines. Unlimited access. Normally $10 a month, you get 200 magazines. New Yorker's in there. Vanity Fair, The Atlantic, some of the best investigative journalism. I know we're all obsessed with U.S. politics, domestic and international news, but there's gossip. I got People magazine in there, too, which is nice because I would feel guilty buying that. I try to like kind of quickly look at it when I'm in the grocery store, but
nobody's watching.
Now I can
Here's some of my Texture magazines, Leo. We got Fast Company.
Yep.
We got Esquire. We got Ebony.
Yep.
Dwell.
Yep.
And Modern Farmer and AARP.
Wait a minute.
Modern Farmer is a great publication.
What?
Yeah.
I like to read about politics, so is Teen Vogue included?
Yes,
another
it is.
Great publication.
I need that.
Actually, Grown Up Vogue is there. I don't know if Teen Vogue is there. Must
Lauren
be.
Duca, great writer, Teen Vogue.
She's been killing it. Thank
isn't
you.
She been
crushing
Lauren,
it.
Isn't
crushing
everybody
it.
Should follow Lauren Duca. She is murdering Twitter. And also longer form texts.
It's really amazing, isn't it? So, you see, we love magazines. The thing is, it's clutter on the coffee table. If you subscribe, you feel guilty. I used to subscribe to The New Yorker, and it was like an assignment every week. They had to go through all this. And I felt guilty if I didn't read it. But this way, you can favorite your magazines. It'll auto-download. You can read them offline. You can put them up on up to 5 devices so you can share it with the family. It's one of Apple's top 2016 iPad apps, but it works on Android as well.
Yeah. This is a solution to the filter bubble problem.
Yes.
There are two problems out there.
Open your eyes.
Getting your stuff, reading whatever comes down across your social media has two problems. One, there's a lot of garbage. And two, filter bubbles create themselves just through the algorithms. You subscribe to Texture, you get the National Review
for the National Review.
Smart right-wing politics.
Yeah.
You get the New Yorker for smart left-wing politics. Yep. And in between, there's stuff that isn't political. And you can just shatter your filter bubble and eliminate garbage content from your life and get the highest quality content.
Shatter the filter bubble.
Boom.
Boom.
Boom. And
it's like a commercial within a commercial. I love it.
I also like it that, there's stuff that like Variety and Ad Week and Billboard that I like to read, but I wouldn't subscribe to. They're very expensive. And this way, it's there.
Make Magazine.
Make is great. Sports
Fantastic.
Illustrated.
Shameless plug, CNET magazine. I saw it there with TJ Miller.
Yay. See? So here's the deal. We got 2 weeks free for you right now. 14-day free trial. If you go to texture.com/twit. Texture.com/twit. 2 weeks aren't going to be enough, but at least it gives you a start.
Yep.
I love it. I just love it. We had a great week, a fun week, and we have a highlight reel that we've put together because we're all looking for work right now. Let's take a look.
Previously on Twit.
Apparently, e-cigarette device batteries are also something that you need to keep an eye on, or they might light your pants on fire in your defendant's arson case. The jury can't believe a lawyer clearly a liar, right?
Triangulation.
We've got a great one today. Cyber Junkies here. Mark Rogers, the principal security researcher at Cloudflare. He's head of security at DEF CON. That's got to be the toughest job in the world.
If you really want to change the world, you do it as a white hat. When you look at the complex problems that nation states face, the only person that's going to be able to dig them out is a hacker.
Tech News Today.
Everyone should have a dream. Justin Kobielka's dream was to create a snake with emoji on its scales. It's called the Emoji Ball Python. Kobielka created it through breeding because recessive mutation causes this pattern. So it has two smiley emoji on there and one alien emoji. Very exciting.
Crazy. It's a Python story on a technology podcast that has nothing to do with Python.
It's true. Yes.
Twit, emoji. The happiest place on earth.
Wow. Megan Maroney, that was a great week. What's coming up next week?
Here's a look at just a few of the stories we'll be following in the week ahead. South by Southwest has already started and will continue through next week. Of course, this was the conference where Twitter, Foursquare, and Meerkat were all born. So we'll be curious as to what to expect to come out of this conference, where people will have to find some other way to get around besides Uber or Lyft, both of which were not allowed inside the Austin city limits. There are some other conferences going on this week. Also, Ad Tech in Sydney, the Experimental Technology Conference in San Francisco, and O'Reilly Strata plus Hadoop World in San Jose. Plus, gaming site Twitch is finally getting a desktop app. It's a revamped version of a chat app called Curse that Twitch bought last year, and it will launch this week on March 16th.
There's my game.
Ever heard of MuleSoft? Me neither. They provide integration software for connecting applications, data, and devices, and they are set to IPO this week. I'm guessing their initial public offering will be quite a little bit less buzzy than Snapchat's a few weeks ago, but I'm all for more software IPOs. And for every new startup that's born, it seems that another one closes its doors. The one-time competitor to Twitter called AppNet will shut down this week on March 14th. The social network worked on the subscription model, and your messages could be a whopping 256 characters. The premium service never really worked out well for AppNet, and they had to pivot to the freemium service just a few months after launch. And now they're closing down. And finally, this is the week that Google says they will purge millions of apps from the App Store if they violate the Play Store's user data policy. Google first warned app developers last month, and the deadline is now Wednesday, March 15th. According to a letter to developers, most apps merely need a valid privacy policy. So get your privacy policies in there, developers. And that is a look at a few of the things we'll be tracking in the coming week. You can join Jason Howell and me on Tech News Today every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, here on twit.tv.
Thank you, Megan Maroney. And, of course, we want to welcome a new member to the Twit team. Nathan Olivares-Giles joins us on Monday. So that'll be a lot of fun.
I had a question about that.
Yeah.
That's a great hire.
He is great. We need some Ute on the staff.
He's bringing the Ute. So is he commuting from San Francisco? Because I believe he lives in San Francisco,
yes,
right?
Yes, I believe he will be, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's a brave boy.
Yeah.
But we're really thrilled to get him. And we're working on new shows with him. And meanwhile, he'll be around for all of our shows. And it'll be great to have Nathan. Is he on next week? He might be on next week on Twit. Yes. But anyway, we'll celebrate that. Yes, he is.
I was terrified I was going to have a BBC moment today where my dogs like came running in.
Right. Oh, that's another thing I wanted to talk about. Darn it, I forgot.
I didn't notice until the like 800th time I watched that video. Did you notice that the wife's pants are halfway down? So clearly she was going to the bathroom and her kids ran into the room.
Oh my God.
Like she had to have been going to the bathroom.
Now we have to watch this. Wait a minute. That is, I didn't realize that. So this guy is doing a BBC hit. He is about the Korean impeachment. Is he in Korea?
He's in Korea.
Scroll up to that little, yeah, you can see when she runs in, This is like play by play. You can see. I love this girl.
She comes.
Like walking into the club, dancing.
Now, anybody like me and you and everybody else who's worked at home and done hits from home knows these things happen.
Yep. Yes.
Now I the problem is it's the BBC, so you can't just say, "Oh, there's my child." So he kind of gives her a little push. He's like, get out of here.
He's with a strong arm. He's like, hey, listen.
And the baby with the
you see,
he comes in.
He's rolling.
Oh my God.
So that's why she's so low, because her pants are down.
Well, also, I think she doesn't. Oh, yeah, they are.
They're not up. They are not up. I feel so bad for that lady, because she had to have been going to the bathroom, and then her kids wandered to the office. She's like, oh my God, no.
Oh.
And then she had to, like,
now, wait a minute. We got to hear the audio on this, because it's obviously, at some point, he's acknowledging that this happened. Let me turn up my sound. At some point, he's acknowledging that this happened, because at first, he sounds like he's trying to pretend it didn't happen, right?
But then the presenter mentions it.
Are you hearing it? I turned it off because of CNET.
There it is. I mean, shifting sands in the region, do you think relations with the North may change?
I would be surprised if they do. pardon me.
And then she drags them out, literally drags them.
And he's just watching this in his Skype, and I'm sure I would just be laughing so hard at that point. Kudos to him for not.
Particularly for the region.
My apologies. North Korea, South Korea's policy choices on North Korea have been severely limited in the last 6 months to a year.
Yeah. And the moral of the story is, don't have kids.
I guess we didn't get the whole clip, because at some point the presenter says something, right?
At the beginning, actually, when the first kid comes in, he said, it looks like one of your children came. Oh, look,
I feel bad because the guy's on the BBC. Oh, see, kids can come in. And this happens all the time on Twit, all the time. Parents, kids come in, dogs come in, animals come in, and we always love it. But it is the BBC, and I
guess. It is the BBC, and he is talking about foreign policy. It's like the most serious thing.
Well, he's got a suit on in his home office because he wants to have that professional.
He probably doesn't have pants either.
How unprofessional it gets.
And I guess she may not know also where the camera is, right? She's hoping she can duck below
it. But he does. Right? He's looking at the camera. He's like, oh,
no,
boy.
This whole thing is on.
That blink is like, that sigh blink is really just my favorite. It's just like, oh.
Stiff upper lip, Chappy.
I love that little girl.
I love her.
She's doing the dance. She's in it. She loves it.
I hope the guy is not shamed I hope he understands that that the world loves
scandals
him.
Happen all the time. The question is, how do democracies respond to those scandals?
And what will it mean for the wider region? I think one of your children has just walked in. I mean, shifting sounds in the region.
Unfortunately, that's the part where he doesn't reflect too well on him.
Yeah.
What he should have done is grabbed his daughter and put her on his lap.
Cool, just sit on my lap.
Yeah, he'd been the cool dad.
My question, I'm curious how many times this guy's been on BBC, because if it was within the first couple times, you of course want to be asked back.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm sure he was horrified if that was the case.
I think that's really what's happening. He's going, oh my God, this is the worst thing that's ever happened.
I would be surprised if they do.
It's also, it says something about TV versus podcast.
Wait a minute. Is that from his wife, the sound, or from the baby coming in? I think that's the wife realizing.
She's panicking.
She's going, oh my God, oh my God.
I would be surprised if they do.
The slide is so Tom Cruise. I'm loving it so much.
And I never noticed her pants are down.
Her
poor woman.
Down, and I just feel terrible for her.
Can this marriage survive?
Listen, man, if you have a wife that loves you that much, you're doing all right. You're doing all right.
I love her. I love Professor. His name is Professor Kelly.
He's on Twitter.
Robert E. Kelly is a political. It sounds like he's an American. A political science professor at Pusan National University. he. By the way, he told his Twitter followers, oh, I'm going to be on the BBC. You might want to watch me. And by the way, no tweets subsequent to that, right?
hasn't been heard from since.
He has not been heard from since. But Robert, the world loves you and your children and your wife.
And of course, Ben Thompson did a frame by frame analysis.
Well, he has, first of all, he has kids.
Yes.
He does these things all the time.
Yeah.
What was, I heard that he did that. Maybe he's just tired Medium. Of writing about.
Yeah, it's on Medium.
Oh, it's on it's on Medium.
He goes through all the points. Okay, first the first daughter walks in, then the other one. Then it's like, and it's just hilarious. The depth.
Oh, yeah, breaking down. This is so great. Breaking down the father on BBC being interrupted by his children.
It's a play-by-play.
Play-by-play. Oh, my God. I am uniquely qualified to break this video down. I've been on TV from a home office. I have children. And crucially, I'm a man, like Robert E. Kelly, our protagonist, who lives in Asia. That is the key to understanding how this went down. I'll see that we're getting a perspective that we didn't get. The most important thing to notice about this quite nice home office, particularly for Asia, is it's really big. The stack of books on the bed over Kelly's left shoulder. Oh, it's a bed. Uh-oh.
He's got it all staged.
These books aren't there by accident. Kelly almost certainly placed them for this interview. Sadly, given the terrible compression applied to Twitter video, I have no idea what books they are, but rest assured they are very befitting Kelly's position as a professor of political science.
Very serious.
And a BBC expert. Books. The map on the wall, a nice touch. This is a man who almost certainly knows his way around the globe, but the blank wall, no, doesn't play well on TV. So you're right. Ben is really, he's really got this.
Yeah.
There are two flaws, though, in Kelly's premeditated presentation. One, the door is ajar. Obviously, that will figure prominently. Two, on the left-hand side of the screen, something is protruding into the picture. What could that be? I have no idea what it is. It's just an excuse to explain that these interviews are done using the webcam in computer displays. It's true. There is no camera person there. Indeed, often you are looking into the camera and seeing nothing on your own screen. It's really disorienting. And one of the reasons I don't like doing these kinds of TV hits, which Ben does do for us.
Yeah.
Although you're right. I don't think he likes it. He's always kind of... Robert E. Kelly, a handsome man. He's dressed for the occasion. As we'll soon find out, he's obviously at home. So why is he wearing a suit and tie? Because he's going on the BBC.
That's right.
That's why.
You gotta be dressed up.
Yep.
Look your best.
He is an academic, PhD in political science from Ohio State, the Ohio State University. He says, Ben says, being an academic is a very weird enterprise. Kelly went to Miami of Ohio and the Ohio State University for 12 years. He got his PhD, worked as a lecturer for 2 years, a fairly miserable existence that requires years of schooling, yet earns the salary of a Starbucks barista, which is actually true. Then somehow, Kelly hears a siren song of Asia and takes an associate professorship at Busan National University in Busan, Korea. Fun fact, Busan and Busan are the same world. Well, same word. Welcome to the wonderful world of Romanizing Eastern script languages. However, he is an expert. He contributes, capital E, expert. He contributes to The Economist, Newsweek, The Diplomat, and of course he appears in the BBC like a boss. We will get to the elder daughter's dance in a moment. It's absolutely delightful in a way that can only be truly appreciated by those of us who have daughters. For now, the entrance. I love Ben, you're brilliant. I told you that open door was a problem. The yellow shirt, not a single person watching this clip can miss her appearance.
She might as well have been wearing an arrow.
Yeah. Look over here. There's a yellow thing. And finally, the obliviousness. Dad obviously has no idea about what's to come. The dance. I love her.
I am feeling myself. Maybe she probably just had a really delicious snack.
Yep, going to see Dad.
I'm thinking about her day. Like, I want to know about her day. Oh, that's all I want.
Such a happy little sunflower. Oh, she's great. The acknowledgement. This is the point where Kelly becomes aware his progeny is standing 3 feet away from him. Horrifically, at least from his perspective, he's informed by the BBC anchor. This is where Kelly is getting the most grief on social media, the hand. The prevailing wisdom from folks who've never been on worldwide TV as a means of validating 12 years of academia, that's all one word hyphenated, is that Kelly should have gracefully placed his daughter on his lap and continued on with the interview as if nothing had happened. Let's back up. What you may or may not know about these TV spots is you don't get paid a dime. Why then does the BBC or CNN or MSNBC or all the other channels have an endless array of experts who are willing to not just call in from their... Wait a minute, they don't pay these guys? I've been doing something wrong. have an endless array of experts who are willing not just to call in from their home office, but will also go to the trouble of putting on a suit and tie and arrange books just so because you're on TV. Here's the deal. The male ego is both remarkably fragile and remarkably easy to satiate. Tell said ego he'll be featured as an expert in front of a national or global audience. He will do whatever it takes, including 12 years of academia and wearing a suit at home to ensure it's so. The flip side, though, potential level of embarrassment that is hard to fathom. In this case, Kelly is fulfilling his self-selected destiny. He is appearing as an expert across the world on the BBC, but it is not going well. His daughter has appeared, and while he certainly loves her, he must keep up appearances, thus the hand and not overt affection. Ignore the baby in the doorway, which is the most hilarious moment on one's first viewing, although not necessarily later. Oh, this is very funny. His daughter DGAF.
She don't give
doesn't give a F. She just got the hand and reacted not with shock, but with playing with her pen. She's awesome. We don't know if
she's
the second...
She's like, I don't need you. She says, I got this pen.
I got a pen. It's okay, Dad. We don't know if the second born is a boy or girl. Frankly, it doesn't matter. All that we know is after valiantly fighting off his firstborn, who he loves, all of Kelly's efforts are undone by the second born that he probably doesn't pay enough attention to, mimicking her older sister. It's basically the Royal Tenenbaums brought to life.
This is a truly great commentary. This is why Medium exists.
Oh, I love it. Thank you, Ben Thompson. Oh, my God. Yes. This is the moment where this clip enters the pantheon of internet viral videos. As usual, it's the woman, in this case, the mom, who makes it legendary. But wait, was it the mom or was it a nanny? This has been a point of contention on social media. I'm pretty sure it's the mom. And now that I know their pants are down, I'm definitely yes. sure it's them. I have white American, Asian, mixed kids, so I'm kind of a subject matter expert. These look like mixed kids. Most maids in Korea, like Taiwan, where I live, are foreign. This mom, though, absolutely looks East Asian Korean, in fact. And given that Kelly is paid in expertise, he probably can't afford a Korean maid. The desperation with which he enters the room is a desperation born of love, not duty. You can't deny it. She wants That's her right. husband to look good. That's why she flies in. And frankly, takes too long getting the kids out of there because she's trying so hard. She cares too much above everyone else.
She cares too much is exactly right. She cares too much. So much.
Above everyone else. I'm going to mark that. I have to log in. Screw it. Never mind. Oh, I'm sorry. Ay, 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 caramba. There you go. Wait a minute. She cares too much. There, now it's highlighted. Above everyone else, I feel for the mom. I'm assuming it was the mom from here on out because she was probably responsible for those kids during said call. But moms have a lot to do. And seriously, Dad should have closed the damn door.
That's true.
Yes. She's going to feel absolutely awful for having upset his call. And you know what? I feel bad for her for feeling this way. It was almost certainly an honest mistake. Also, her pants may not be completely pulled up, as opposed to Kelly, who honestly may not be wearing any at all.
Also true.
Look, for all the sympathy I just gave Mom, she deserves some kudos as well. She just moved into the room, grabbed both kids, then beat a retreat while barely showing her face. It's impressive stuff. Meanwhile, Dad is apologizing for the love of his life interfering with his ego. Men.
Look, I gotta say, like, there's a couple comments about, like, male ego and, like, oh, he's a... If that had happened with my husband, like, I would be just as horrified. I'd be horrified. My ego is the same.
Understand. When you're on camera, you're trying to put on a good presence.
I'd be, like, strong-arming my dog. Like, no.
Well, that's the truth. The first time people are on, they always apologize. You did. You said, oh, I'm glad my dogs didn't show up. And I really want to make a point. It's always welcome.
Plus, you can't think in situations like that.
That's another thing.
Ben did a great job of like pointing out how big it is to be on the BBC when you're an academic and establishing yourself as a credible. It's just the lights, the camera. Yeah. It's like you can't even think. So I don't. Nobody
you're already nervous here, about the things you're saying, like making sure they're accurate and you're getting them out. In
you're very focused.
Coherent sentences. Yeah. And then you look into your Skype and you see in the background your yellow-shirted kid dancing up into your shot. And you're just like, my life is ending right now. It's just everything's falling apart. This is not great.
Dad has just apologized multiple times for the interruption while Mom is desperately trying to let him shine. It really is the reach, though, that makes him so spectacular, makes it so spectacular, and he retweets Sports Pickle, who says, "Who did it better?" Of course, was that Odell
really
Beckett Jr. or of the Giants, the catch, or is it the? Yeah, really, it is. That's why I'm all in on mom. Nannies don't lay it out like this. She loves her man. She's proud of his expertise, and she's going to do everything she can to make him look good. Nice. Thank you, Ben. What a great. You're right. Everybody told me, oh, you got to see Ben's breakdown. That really was good. That's nice.
Play by play. I love
it. Play by play. I want to talk a little bit about Twitter in just a bit. When we come back, a new feature that warns users of profiles with potentially sensitive content. And I have to say, I feel like they're on the right track with abuse, but I want to know what the panel thinks. First, a word, though, from WordPress. I didn't know this. WordPress runs 27% of the websites.
I did not know that.
WordPress is,
that is high
huge.
Percentage.
Yes, it is high percentage. And it's a great success. WordPress.com wants to salute all the small business owners out there during Small Business Month. The tool belt toting, that's hard to say. That's harder to say than Ashley Athquetha. The tool belt toting plumbers, the canine sweater stitchers, the horn rimmed glasses wearing flat screen TV installers, the corner deli foot long deliverers, the Williamsburg pundits, and the mom, threw that one in for you. The south of Williamsburg pundits and the mom and pop lawyers who look out for our best interests. And I have to say, some of the best websites in the world. If you have a business and you are not on the web, you don't exist for most people, WordPress is quietly powering the sites and the websites for thousands of small businesses. More websites run on WordPress than any other platform. With built-in search engine optimization, mobile-friendly design, your customers can find your website easily, access it from any device. If you, I swear, it used to be, well, if you don't have a Yellow Page listing and a phone, you can't be in business. Now, I really think before I even hire a plumber or a dog sitter, I go and look at the website. That's where you learn about them. So if you want to make a big difference as a small business owner, you better get your site up and running. Go to WordPress.com. It's easy, 24/7 support. And right now, 15% off any new plan purchase. 15% off at WordPress.com/twit. WordPress.com/twit.
We just had an election here in Los Angeles. And my local city had 3 people running for mayor. And only one person had a website. Guess who I voted for?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Only one. And it was just, they had no other information online. It was just, they were relying on flyers and kind of more local.
That seems like a kind of an oversight.
There was only one person who had an official website.
Was that Eric Garcetti?
Oh, I don't live in LA proper.
Oh, you're in a little town.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's not just having a
website. I live south of Williamsburg.
Way south.
Southwest.
I think that is a neighborhood in
southwest
LA.
Southwest of Williamsburg. Yeah.
Okay. But it's important that it's human nature to look at a website and judge the entire company. If a website looks like it's stale from the 90s, you're
like
thinking, this company is going to be terrible.
It's like a face.
Yeah.
So I recoil at sites that look like they were built on GeoCities. I get really upset.
I just saw there was a government website that looked like it was from 1995.
Really?
Oh, it probably is.
Oh, I wish I could remember that. You are.
It undermines your credibility. It's really
It's crazy.
Not good. Hey, can I make a point of privilege here, Leo? You can pop this out, but Mike inspired me. He talked about this gastro nomad thing.
Yes.
And I don't have a wife, but I do have a girlfriend, and she's up to cool stuff, too.
By the way, that's a big story. Workers. Wait a minute. Breaking news. Baratunde has a girlfriend.
Don't do that. That's crazy.
Breaking news. No, I know you do. You know why? Because you and your new lady came to our neck of the woods. You were in Napa, and I begged you. I pleaded with you. I said, come here. He said, no, I got a girlfriend.
I ignored your entreaties because it's not their own business.
Hey, did you have a good time in Napa, by the way?
We had a great time. I'd never been before.
Isn't it beautiful?
We went to, there's a black family-owned vineyard called Brown Estate, which had like such an incredible story.
I've never heard of it.
Family, 3 kids. They're kind of up in the hills, like in northern Napa, which means something apparently. It's all new to me. So I'm just like, you guys have wine. That's exciting. But the way they do it. is cool, and we got to meet one of the owners.
I love that.
Most importantly, how's their wine?
The wine is whiny and yummy. It's a here's how I would
the
describe
kids are whiny.
It.
So
oh, and they got good names. Chaos Theory. I want some Chaos like Theory. Wow.
It's funky. So they make a lot of Zinfandels, which apparently are like people like to talk a lot of trash about. Zins? I'm learning all this.
Oh, no. I love the Zin.
Those people can just stop that because Zinfandels are delicious.
Yeah. So these guys have like the way they place their – anyway, this is not an ad for Brown Estate. It was actually an ad for the work.
We'll get to your girlfriend in a moment.
That was the whole point because then I want to hear about Ashley. You can plug your husband and their people.
No, tell – so first of all, what's her name?
Her name's Elizabeth.
Does she have a job?
Yeah, so that's what – you're like – I love these leading questions. This is great. You're making this easier. So she runs this group, Civic Hall. Wait,
this is how this daylight savings time has ruined my mind.
Yeah,
I just Googled Elizabeth to find her.
Well, that just makes it easy. She has, and it's the Elizabeth with hair, right?
Yeah. She's got a face and everything, guys. She's like a real person.
And then you had a heart attack and ran over a koala. This thing has
she's
to
not
end.
Canadian. I swear she exists.
Okay.
But the work that her team is up to is related to some of the stuff we've been talking about. It's like tech in the public good. And so it's this group called CivicHallLabs.org. And they are running the Big Apps Challenge for New York City, which is a citywide hackathon.
Awesome.
And it's the oldest hackathon in like U.S. city history, which is 7 years. It's not that long. But they've twisted it around a bit. So if you go to like BigApps.nyc, or civichalllabs.org to see their larger suite. They're just up to some cool stuff, and I think they're trying to solve problems with tech that a lot of private industry won't because there's not as much profit in it, but it's important. So, you know, as we talk about collective data management or like using some of these tech tools for nonprofit seeking entities, I wanted to put a plug in
for us
doing good work with tech. So
that's one of the things, by the way, that bothers me. About the new administration. There's so much chaos and so much disarray and so much infighting and so forth. I wonder what's happening to some of the transparency, the digital government initiatives that were started under the Obama administration. Our friend Matt Cutts is there. I don't know if he's, you know, if he's being listened to or if the, what is it, CSDS? What's the group?
The U.S. Digital Service.
U.S. Digital Service.
I spent a good amount of time with them.
I know.
In the previous administration. I don't have insight into how that particular group is going. I think if you look at what's happening at the State Department or the EPA, I mean, just in staff reduction alone, not even talking ideology, which, you know, people can argue and our listeners will have different points of view on, but like a 35% reduction in the State Department, and I think it was like 30% reduction in the EPA, that sends a strong signal. And when someone like Steve Bannon says he aims to destroy the administrative state, they might not have as their highest priority using tech in the interest of the public to help deliver government services, which they don't probably believe should be government services in the first place, like protecting water or issuing visas to, you know, people who want to come to this country.
And those are things that the U.S. Digital Service did and did
very,
very well.
Yeah, they helped accelerate government service delivery through tech. And so, a lot of what Civic Hall Labs is up to is in that same spirit, vein.
Maybe it's happening locally, even if it's not happening nationally.
Definitely. That's part of the beauty of states. Like, it's the United States of America. We have 50 little Petri dishes.
Right.
And so a lot of those are continuing on that mission, even as the national level switches tone significantly.
Right.
Cool.
Really cool. I'll try to get a hold of Matt and see if we can. He probably can't say anything. He hasn't been able to talk to us since he joined the U.S. Digital
Service.
He's
in an undisclosed
location.
Maybe
you can find him through an alt Matt Cutts Twitter account.
He's on Confide. Rogue. You can find him on Confide.
He's on Rogue.
I feel like we've been making great progress in the transparency and digital government and so forth. And I hope we continue to make that progress.
Yeah.
I think it's very important. It's part of modernizing the government.
Yep.
All right, Ashley, tell us about your husband.
Well, he doesn't work for a nonprofit, I'm involved with a nonprofit, and so I'll tell you about that because shameless self promo. We have a Kickstarter happening right now. We actually need help. So I am on the board of a nonprofit called Take This. The website's takethis.org, as in Legend of Zelda, take this. It's dangerous to go alone.
Nice.
And it was started after a journalist colleague of a handful of us in the gaming and tech industry. Yes, it is. We lost a colleague. He committed suicide, and nobody knew he was suffering from mental health problems.
How often does that happen? Isn't that sad?
So often. So sad. And so we were like, we have to do something. And so we started Take This. And it's a nonprofit. It's a 501. And so all of your donations are tax deductible. And we do one of the key things that we do, amongst other things, is we go to conventions like PAX. So just recently this weekend, we were at PAX East, and we do what's called the AFK room. And so the AFK room is a quiet space for people who get overwhelmed on the show floor, who might have social anxiety or might have other phobias, or just simply need a quiet space to go to during these really exciting and visually overwhelming conventions, to sit. And we also staff the room with mental health clinicians and volunteers. So if you need to talk to somebody, that is a place where you can do it. And we help you find clinicians in your area that can help you continue that that journey. So it's something I'm really proud of being involved in. And right now we had sort of a weird... We had an Indiegogo, and then they said they were switching platforms or payment platforms, and then they cut off our crowdfund there. And we had to very quickly, bless our founder, our co-founder, Russ Pitts, had to very quickly come up with a Kickstarter.
Oh, I know Russ very well. This is Russ Pitts?
Russ is the co-founder with Susan Arendt, who's his wife. So I love them very dearly, and they have worked very hard to take this into what it is today. And I'm just really proud of the fact that we help people. And we've had families come up to us during shows and say, you know, my kid has agoraphobia or has social anxiety and can't go to events like this without a space like the AFK room. And that makes us feel really good. And so, and we've had other people say, I just didn't know I need help, because in gaming, mental health and mental illnesses, there are stigmas around these things. And we see this in tech all the time, too. A lot of game developers who work for studios are afraid to say they need help, because then companies say, well, you can't do the job. You can't deal with crunch time. And so they get fired. You know, there's stuff like that happens all the time. And we just want to break that stigma. We want to tell people it is okay to seek help, and that you are not alone, and that we are here for you, and there are people out there who want to help. So that's Take This, and I'm really proud to be a part of it, and I'm proud to tell everybody about it.
Wow, this is a great idea. Awesome. And I'm thrilled that you're doing this, and I noticed that the amount just went up by a little bit, and
thank you.
Let's go to kickstarter.com/take this. And I think this is a great idea. And I love AFK. We need an AFK room here.
Yes.
That is a great idea.
I think everybody can use an AFK room.
Away from keyboard.
Especially in tech circles, there are two areas. One is social phobia and introversion, which a lot of tech people have. And there's also people on the scale of
the spectrum, as we call
the spectrum,
it, right?
On the spectrum of autistic spectrum. A lot of geniuses are mildly or seriously autistic. And so that's great for lots of, you know, I think the tech community is what I'm saying is more likely to need something like this.
Love this.
Than the general public.
Gaming Love too. This. You know, yeah, I suffer from anxiety and depression, and I used to bury myself in games whenever I felt terrible.
Me too.
And it was easy, you know, and then I realized I felt terrible all the time. Even though I would play games, at some point they stopped making me feel good. And so I had to figure it out, and I started seeing a therapist, and I feel better. Like I feel like I can enjoy games the way that they were intended for me to be enjoyed now.
Well, wow, Russ, isn't that great? Give Russ my regards. You know, we worked together at Tech TV. He was famous for his resignation letter.
I don't know about this.
Ask
so I'm
him
excited.
About Eagle Spit. That's all I'm going to say. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. We're going to wrap it up because Baratunde has a girlfriend. So
Baratunde, for the record, Baratunde, this is the Nintendo Switch cartridge next to.
Wow. They look like. Oh, the
now Ashley, you're going to make everybody happy if you just lick that.
It tastes disgusting. I won't lick it.
Yeah.
Oh,
I won't do it.
Don't hurt yourself. I tried.
Don't.
Don't put yourself in pain. No, I'm headed to Austin, and I've got to still pack.
We didn't even get to talk about South by, but we'll talk about that next week. Maybe
after.
After it's over. It'll be a better time to talk about it than before it happened.
What happened?
Have a great time. Are you giving a panel or anything?
I'm doing a talk about Trump and tech.
Nice.
This Wednesday.
So, that shouldn't be too
controversial. The cyber.
I hope Barry comes.
Huge.
Yes. Yeah.
Got to get the cyber.
Thank you so much,
Barry. I'm going to present from my Galaxy S3. So
good luck getting to the hotel without an Uber.
I'm just going to walk. I'm going to move the old-fashioned way.
Good plan. So one of those city bikes.
So great to have you on, Baratunde. You're the best. Thank you so much, Baratunde Thursday.
Pleasure to be on with Mike and Ashley. I've never been on with you guys before. It was a joy, and my pants are still off, Mike. Yay. So you did a real good job scaring me.
Don't forget How to Be Black. The book is still in bookstores everywhere, and it's a great read, Baratunde's book. And you can follow him on Twitter at Baratunde. Thank you, Baratunde.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ashley. You are now a regular on this show. Anytime you want to be on, you were so much fun.
I had a blast. Smart. It was great.
Yeah, Ashley Esquetha.
Esquetha.
How would I know?
At the end.
After I spent so much time learning this, I got to have you back now, right? Esquetha.
That's right. It's only worth learning my last name if you're actually going to have me back.
Senior editor at CNET. That's true. Many people, I never learn their last names. Mike, what's his name over here?
Who knows?
Yeah. Hey, it's so nice to have you. Thank you for joining us, Ashley.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is wonderful. And everybody is, you guys are so great. I love talking to you.
Good. We'll have you back. CNET.com, senior editor. Over there. Are you going to go to South by too?
No South by for me. I'm actually going to be covering somebody who will be training to ride a jetpack this week. So that should be
In Van Nuys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know about this.
Yeah, I was invited to that and I was going to go and I pulled out at the last minute because it sounds dangerous. I'll let her.
There is nothing I want more than a Boba Fett jetpack. So this is step one. So I'm ready to go and just watch and take it all in and take notes. So that when I can buy a jetpack, I'll be ready.
Thank you, Ashley. And Mike Elgin, don't forget, brand new. And, you know, we love Amira, your wife, and I'm so thrilled. And I cannot wait to do this. GastroNomad.net.
That's right. There's a newsletter. If you're just curious, you'd sign up for the newsletter, and you can get it whenever we post
this
something.
This is brilliant.
It's brilliant. It's perfect
for her,
too.
How many people can you bring on one of these?
It's probably going to be between 6, 8, 10, maybe 12. Depends on the city. So... depends on the space. It's all very customized to the place.
I want to do Cuba with you.
Yes, that would be great. Havana, she's talked about that. We're also eventually going to do one in Sonoma.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that one will fit.
Because this is, of course, one of the great food
foodie destinations. Me and Baratunde are going to come to that.
That's right. I'm coming back, baby.
Yeah. Deal.
Yep.
Thanks, everybody, for being here. We love having you. If you come every Sunday at 3 p.m., we'll be here. Well, maybe it's 3 p.m. Pacific at 6 p.m. Eastern time. It is now 2200 UTC. That's from now on, 2200 UTC. That's all you have to remember.
What was that again?
I don't know. I forgot.
That was the anticlimactic end to your rant.
It's over. No. But if you can't watch live, and by the way, great studio audience today. If you want to be in the studio audience, he made tickets at twit.tv. Lovely having you guys. You can also join us in the chat room if you're watching live, irc.twit.tv. But we also make on-demand audio and video of everything we do available on our website, twit.tv/thisweekintech. You can watch on YouTube. You can watch on any podcatch application that you prefer. Just look for Twit and subscribe, and that way we'll see you next week. Did I do everything? Have I said everything? I think it's time to say one more thing, and that is another Twit is in the can. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
This is amazing.